boom, 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 boom.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hi. Tonight.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake up call. Good morning. This is Liz Brown. The Monday after the Friday before. Thank you all so much. International Urban Institute, we had members out there at the forefront. We had blankets from the International Urban Institute. We rock. A lot of folks out there helping out with a blanket drive. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pennies, nickels and dimes and efforts and dollars and blankets went into this year's blanket drive. I want to thank everybody for it. I must say, and I think, Howard, we're going to have to pull this up. I think we're going to have to pull up the wonderful job that the Central Visual Performing Arts did. We'll have that special for you tomorrow. We'll pull that up for you and isolate that so that you, for those of you that missed the babies singing, you'll have an opportunity to hear them singing. They were amazing. I want to thank everybody. We spent Saturday, thank all of the volunteer workers for the Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. Thank you all so much. We were out Saturday morning from 8 until about 3. Then we waited till nightfall, and we were out from 8 until No, from 6 until about almost 10 o'clock. I'm handing out blankets. The need is there. And because I don't hang out in downtown St. Louis, I don't hang out there. It's amazing to me to drive through downtown St. Louis and to see police car after police car after police car steadfastly, is that a word? Guarding the interest of downtown St. Louis. It's really breathtaking. Cops are everywhere. Cops were everywhere downtown. A friend of mine said that, no, Liz, they're not downtown to protect. They're downtown to Google the girls that go in and out of the bars at night downtown. And I don't mean Google on the internet. My name is Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. We have a lot of, this is an amazing day, stuffed like a Christmas turkey. We have so much stuff to talk about this morning. So many issues we're going to cover. I'll be describing some of those when we come back. Stay with me.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@wgnu.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
This is Judy Moskov. Join me for A Gardener's Notebook every Monday at 12 noon on AM 920 WGNU. As a master gardener, I'll answer your questions about what grows and what doesn't, how to control annoying garden pests, and help you create colorful flower gardens and the freshest fruits and vegetables you've ever tasted. Join me, Judy Moskov, for A Gardener's Notebook, Mondays at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the gardening issues that matter most to you.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This morning we have a full show. This full, oh my goodness, full day. 7 o'clock we have the Aldermanic Watch with Lewis Reed. We're going to be covering the issues in your community. And then in the second and the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking to an author, Stephen P. Kerman. He's written a book entitled Last Rites, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System. He talks about how dying in America has changed and how America doesn't do right by those that are dying. And also he talks about what you can do. In fact, one of the things that he is going to talk about is when you have a terminal patient, what their family, he's going to tell us at least five things that families should ask doctors after learning that a loved one needs terminal care. Last Rites, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System. Stephen P. Kernan is going to be joining me in the 8 o'clock hour. And then in the 9 o'clock hour, Mondays at 9, well, folks are coming down from D.C. Everybody is talking about malaria now. Now they're saying that malaria enhances AIDS in people in Africa. Somehow it acts as a catalyst that makes AIDS worse. We have someone that's going to be coming on in the 9 o'clock hour, Liam Sheff, who's going to say bunk to that. Bunk to that. And also this extraordinary story about in Africa, apparently what the pharmaceuticals consider the place where they can go and experiment on human beings. They're also making the claim that if you circumcise men, even when they're 25, 30, 40 years old, it makes it, circumcision on adults is a good AIDS prevention. Y'all got to be out your mind. We're going to talk about that in the 9 o'clock hour, Mondays at 9. You don't want to miss that with my guest, Liam Sheff. That's a full morning, folks. So fasten your seatbelts. We have a lot of stuff to talk about now. A lot of folks are coming out to talk about their efforts to become the next United States president. I'm excited. I am excited, and I'm not excited about Barack Obama. I'm not excited about Hillary, which way is the political wind blowing, because that's what I'm going to go with. Barack Obama, I'm a superstar. I'm a black man. I got this. Well, then let's compare Barack Obama to John Edwards, who's getting ready to announce his candidacy for the United States presidency, and John Tester, a Democrat out of Montana. Okay? Now let's just compare and contrast a Barack Obama to a John Edwards. John Edwards is going to announce his presidency, his run for the presidency. Guess where? In New York City? No, sir. In Los Angeles, California, no ma'am. On the front porch of, right, standing right next to his grandmama's swinging rocker. Is he going to do one of those types of, I'm so down that I have, my grandmama has a rocker, and I am going to go nostalgic on you, that's why you should vote for me. Is he going to go nostalgic? No. He gonna step right up in the thick of it. John Edwards, former North Carolina senator, is announcing his campaign in New Orleans in the Ninth Ward. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Why? Because he's gonna talk about the things that everybody else is running away from. He gonna talk about the things. Huh. We also know that Evan Baier said he's not going to run. Edwards is the leading candidate in the first nominating state, Iowa. Iowa loves them, some Edwards. Oh, they show up for Barack Obama's thing. Just like you show up for the Temptations concert, but you don't vote for him for president. Okay, they like to be entertained by Barack Obama. But John Edwards is leading in the polls. So let's be real about this. Let's be real about this. Huh. They say that if Edward can hold on to his lead until early 2008, he can do this. Huh. The question is that just because you start strong doesn't mean you're going to finish the race. I've been to horse races. Just because you finish it, because you start strong, you first out the box, doesn't mean you're going to win the race. And compare that to Barack Obama and his voting that he has engaged in while he has been a United States Senator. And then I want to go to Montana. From Barack Obama to Montana. There's a new senator, John Tester, senator-elect from Montana. Tester ran his campaign against Conrad Burns. What does Tester do? He's an organic farmer. Good golly. An organic farmer in the United States Senate? And during the campaign, y'all going to love this. Y'all going to love this. In a debate, now John Tester ran against Senator Conrad Burns. In a debate last September, Conrad Burns, who was the incumbent, said, "We cannot afford another 9/11. I can tell you right now that John Tester, wants to weaken the Patriot Act." And you know what John Tester said? Oh, y'all gonna love this. John Tester said, "Let me be clear. I don't want to weaken the Patriot Act. I want to get rid of it." How many senators have ever said that? I don't want to weaken the Patriot Act. I want to get rid of it. Tester built his campaign from the ground up, didn't want any support from John Kerry, didn't want any support from Hillary Clinton. Instead, this man is 300 pounds. He lost three fingers in a meat grinding accident as a child. He drove around the state, meeting people and shaking their hands. Now, you know, he's not the perfect politician. He's wishy-washy on the death penalty, wishy-washy on other issues. But to say, I think that a person should get credit for saying something fearless in the current atmosphere. He said, "I don't want to weaken the Patriot Act. I want to get rid of it." That's profound. And fearless in a, and he ran on it. Now the question thing, the thing that we should be looking at now is that will he shun the corporate money now that he's got in there? We got to keep an eye on him. But those are the types of things, those are the types of words, those are the type of positions that when you evaluate people you look for. John Edwards is starting in New Orleans. I think we can kind of figure out where he's going to go. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. Stay with me.
morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock, and AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Tahiti Village. Westbound 70 onto Route N and Florissant Road. North ramp, look for an overturned vehicle well off the roadway. Emergency vehicles have the left lane closed at this hour. Eastbound 40 at 141 and 270, heavy volume going on there. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79, expect slow delays. Westbound 270 between 367 and 170, no problems there. Northbound 270 at 44, that traffic is building on either side. Northbound 55 between Butler Hill and 270, look for slow traffic there. Westbound 5570 from Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge is slow. The Route 3 ramp onto the PSB is flowing freely. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at the Illinois Bank and Laqueeds Landing, look for normal traffic. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Tahiti Village. Why haven't you called Tahiti Village yet? You've heard Tanya Roberts on the radio offering couples complimentary three-day, two-night hotel in Las Vegas. So call today, 877-57-VEGAS. That's 877-57-VEGAS. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Cloudy, cooler, 20% chance of light rain in the morning. Steady temps in the mid-40s for this evening. Mostly cloudy, colder with a low in mid-30s. Tuesday, partly cloudy, high in the upper 40s. And Wednesday, they're calling for mostly cloudy skies with a high around 50. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 44 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 43. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Make your holiday exciting by celebrating Christmas New Orleans style.
Come for the food.
Come for the art.
Come for the history.
Come for the sweet sounds of jazz.
Visit NewOrleansOnline.com to plan a December getaway filled with Réveillon feasts, free concerts, French Quarter shopping, and all the excitement of Harrah's Casino. And make it last with discounted hotel rates, courtesy of Papa Noel himself. Visit NewOrleansOnline.com today to get your free guide with more than $2,400 in coupons and jazz up your December New Orleans style.
Come for the fun.
Come feel good.
Come for the beauty. Come for the
spirit, heart, and soul.
Come for it all.
Come fall in love with New Orleans all over again.
Discover Christmas New Orleans style at NewOrleansOnline.com.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap. Weekday afternoons, immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis.
Sponsored by Reasonable Construction. Stop putting it off.
Nothing can be truer than the phrase, all politics is local. That's why Liz Brown is adding the Automatic Watch to the award-winning Wake Up Calls lineup. Every Monday at 7 a.m., Liz will be joined by Alderman Lewis Reed to discuss the comings and goings of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen. Do you want to know the latest bill passed? Do you want to know why it passed? And do you want to know who voted for and who voted against? Well, you're going to have to join Liz Brown when she talks aldermanic politics with Alderman Lewis Reed every Monday at 7 a.m. Lewis Reed is going to bring local politics up close and personal, and you never know who else will be joining the discussion. The Automatic Watch, every Monday at 7 a.m., only on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Around the world, behind the story, it's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, yuletide carols being sung by a choir and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard sleeping tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much business to tend to. I'm looking at two stories that are related. And that kind of gets to some noise that's in the air out here about what is going to happen in the Iraq war. The D student, the F student, boy George has put off doing his homework. I'm going to hand in my homework after the Christmas holidays. I'll give you a report on what we're supposed to do after Christmas. Well, the report was due in December. No, after Christmas, that would be Boy George. But the noise that we're hearing out here is the possibility of increasing the number of troops in Iraq. Have y'all lost your dang minds? Have you lost your minds? Story that came out that you might have missed last week out of the Wall Street Journal. Despite a $168 billion budget, the Army faces a cash crunch. Let me try to break this down for you so that you are clear on the significance of this. Let me break this down. From 1990 to 2005, our good military lavished money on billion-dollar destroyers, on fighter jets, on missile defense systems, high-tech weaponry. And of the $1.9 trillion, with a T, trillion, the United States spent on weaponry in that period, from 1990 to 2005, the Air Force received 36% of that $1.9 trillion. The Navy got 33%, and the Army took in 16%. How's that Navy, spending all that money on the Navy, working out for us out there in that Iraq war? Maybe that's why Boy George stood on a carrier and said mission accomplished. Because he's, additionally clueless, as if you could be. 16% is what the military got. We need the Army, don't we? And not only that, we need to underscore one more time that we sent $168 billion to the Army. That's twice as much as the 2000 budget. But check this out. The cost of basic equipment that soldiers carry into battles, the helmets, the rifle, the body armor, has tripled. In 1999, it cost $7,000 to pay for that equipment, the helmets, the rifles, the body armor. You know what it cost in the year 2006? $25,000. It's gone from $7,000 to $25,000. In 2001, a Humvee cost $32,000. Guess what it cost in 2006? In 2001, it was $32,000. In 2006, it is $225,000. The cost of paying and training our troops, 60%. In 2001, it cost $75,000 to train our troops. Today, it cost $120,000. At Fort Knox, that's where they keep the gold, right? That's where they keep the gold. The cash crunch got so bad this summer that the Army ran out of money to pay janitors who clean the classrooms where the captains are taught to be commanders. So the officers, who will soon be leading 100 soldier units, are now cleaning the office toilets themselves. Officers are cleaning toilets. And let's be clear the recruiting goals. Let's talk about those for a second. The Army has made much of the fact that it's met its recruiting goals for 2006, bringing in 80,000 soldiers. But how did they get 80,000 soldiers? They had to spend $735 million on retention bonuses just in 2006. That's up from $85 million in 2003. Let me say that again. In the year 2006, we are spending $735 million on retention money to keep people in the Army. We only had to spend $85 million. Do you know what the difference between $735 and $85 is? You realize how much money that is? And the Army had to spend more than $300 million more on recruiting people. So did we get a good bang for our buck? We spent $300 million and we lowered our standards. And the Army lowered their standards. 8,500 recruits in 2006 required moral waivers. That means, oh, yeah, they have had criminal misconduct and drug use. That's triple the number of moral waivers that we had from 10 years ago. The Army also took in more troops who scored in the bottom third on its aptitude test. And as the Army has brought in more borderline recruits, the Army has found itself short of officers and sergeants. I guess so, if you're telling officers they got to clean toilets. I imagine that doesn't help the morale. And they're cleaning toilets because the Army doesn't have money to pay the janitors, the custodians. The troops who a year ago might have flunked out of basic training are still there. But one first class sergeant says, who oversees a 30-soldier platoon, says two of his soldiers were caught using marijuana and methamphetamines. Other leaders have seen an increase in accidents on and off the base. Discipline is a lot worse. This is our Army. This is the Army that they want to send more people to Iraq. One 877-920-WGNU. Yeah. Be all you can be, right? Be everything that you shouldn't be. Is what we have going on in the United States Army. Dolores.
I told you somebody is making money off of this war. Did you happen to see the interview Sunday? They interviewed the Iraqi people over there, and they were saying that the men that they interviewed said that under George Bush with this war, that they want the United States to get out of there because it's worse off now than it was when Saddam Hussein was in office. They say they don't have running water, no job, no electricity. They don't have anything. And they say it is worse now than it was when Saddam Hussein was in office. They said at least when he was in office, they had all the essentials that they needed, but now they don't have anything.
And they want this administration wants to send more soldiers out.
Where are they going to get them from? And if they send all of these soldiers over there, who's protecting the land over here? Because I saw a story years ago when I was a young girl, and they were saying, now I don't know how true it is, but this is how the United States was going to be taken over. Because they said that they were not going to have enough people here to protect the land over here because they're going to all be scattered everywhere.
Mm.
That's scary.
It's awful.
Okay.
Thank you, Dolores. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I will be back after this. Stay with me.
Congresswoman Maxine Waters, no matter where I am in the world, I can always get the information I need from the Wake Up Call with my friend Liz Brown.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Are you ready to step out? Are you ready to put those dancing shoes on? Are you ready to listen to the music that made America swing? Then you're ready for Swing Time. Goldie's Music has compiled over 40 of the best of the big band era dance songs in a 3-CD set called Swing Time. Enjoy Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, Duke Ellington, Woody Herman, Benny Goodman, Count Basie, Artie Shaw, Les Brown, Sammy Kaye, Stan Kenton, and many, many more. All songs have been digitally remastered for the highest quality and sound. Keep the party swinging with Swing Time. This collection of masterpieces is not available in any store. Here's how to order.
Call 1-800-577-3995. That's 1-800-577-3995. 1-800-577-3995.
Swing Time makes a great gift.
Nothing can be truer than the phrase, all politics is local. That's why Liz Brown is adding the Automatic Watch to the award-winning Wake Up Calls lineup. Every Monday at 7 a.m., Liz will be joined by Alderman Lewis Reed to discuss the comings and goings of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen. Do you want to know the latest bill passed? Do you want to know why it passed? And do you want to know who voted for and who voted against? Well, you're going to have to join Liz Brown when she talks Automatic Politics with Alderman Lewis Reed every Monday at 7 a.m. Lewis Reed is going to bring local politics up close and personal, and you never know who else will be joining the discussion. The Automatic Watch, every Monday at 7 a.m., only on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
To say
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400. In the next hour, we have the Automatic Watch with Alderman Lewis Reed. And then in the next hour, in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to have a wonderful conversation. I think it's an important conversation, given the aging of our baby boomers and giving the state of medical care. We're going to have a discussion with author Stephen P. Kerman. He is the author of Last Rites, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System. Stephen makes the point that death in America is changing. You know, before Americans died of sudden causes, today they're succumbing to slow illnesses like cancers. And so we have to deal with death differently. And is the medical system adjusting to dealing with death differently? He makes the case that in many cases, in many aspects, the medical system is not. And then in the 9 o'clock hour at Mondays at 9, we're going to be talking to Liam Sheff. There's now newspapers all over the country. There's Boy George had a meeting about malaria and AIDS. An extraordinary story that malaria now acts as, some scientists have concluded that malaria acts as a enhancer somehow of AIDS in Africa, only in Africa. How can that be? Liam Sheff is going to be on the show to talk about it's not true. It's bunk. It's bunk, it's bunk, it's bunk. We're going to be talking about that in the Mondays at 9 segment. It's a full morning here at WGNU on the wake-up call. We have much business to talk about. I do want to send a shout-out of thanks. Thank you, thank you, thank you to all of the wake-up call blanket drive volunteers. You went beyond the pale. So many of you were just amazing in your generosity of your time and your spirit and your help. We gave away so many blankets, so many, many, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of blankets. We gave them away. We worked from sunup to sundown. We were there in the morning, early morning hours to about 3. And then from 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock, we traveled the highways and the byways of the St. Louis area, handing out blankets, listening to people's stories, handing out hot chocolate, handing out sleeping bags. And listening to people's stories and watching people and their needs and their issues. I wish we had more sleeping bags to give out. We gave out over 100 sleeping bags. It was an amazing thing. It was an amazing day. And just such a clear reminder of the needs that we have out here in our city. So thank you so much. I want to thank all the folks, Charles Quincy Troop. I want to thank the International Urban Institute, which supplied workers and money for blankets. It's a powerful thing. And all of the volunteers, I'm going to give you a special shout out because y'all deserve it. But thank you all for all of the help and George Washington Carver House for allowing us to use their facilities. It was a wonderful thing. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing. And to the babies at Central Visual Performing Arts, it was an empowering thing. You really, really touched folks. 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much business to tend to. 1-877-920-WGNU. Get up. Get up. Get to me. I want to, I've told you about the challenge that the military is facing in recruitments and in money. We have a $168 billion budget, yet the Army is facing a cash crunch. Recruitment is, they have their 80,000 recruits, but it's come at the cost of hundreds of millions of dollars in retention money and a lowering of standards. And there's so much more, folks. This is a story out of Tucson. Y'all know where Tucson is in Arizona? And Tucson, in Tucson at a midtown strip mall, two military recruiting stations side by side, the Army and the Marines. Huh? And between the two of them, a total of seven recruiters were secretly accepting bribes to transport cocaine even as they spent most of their days visiting high schools. They had help from several more recruiters at the Army National Guard office, where one recruiter was selling cocaine from the trunk of his recruiting vehicle. Together, these dozen or so recruiters formed the nucleus of one of the FBI's biggest public corruption cases, a sting known as Operation Lively Green. Many of the drug-running recruiters remained on the job with continued access to local schools for months, often years, after FBI agents secretly filmed them counting cash next to stacks of cocaine bricks. Some were still recruiting 3 years after they were first caught on camera running drugs while in uniform. Most have pleaded guilty. Some are to be sentenced in March. Some honorably retired from the military. Military recruiting officers say the corruption is not widespread. If you have military men, recruiters in Army uniform selling cocaine out of their recruiting vehicles, there is an atmosphere where folks feel comfortable in doing this. And yes, the problem has to be widespread. Selling drugs out of their trunks of their cars. My name is Liz Brown. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. I'll be back. Stay with me.
I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing, I really need the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from the ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger.
They're a source of inspiration, and they're a part of our motivation for wanting to get back up there and make sure that we get them answers.
A promise to the families of the two climbers who are still missing on Oregon's Mount Hood from Captain Mike Babish of the Oregon National Guard. The body of a third climber found yesterday in a snow cave.
The search is resuming with a renewed effort. Rescuers have now made it to the peak, and despite finding one climber dead, no signs have been found so far of the two men who are still missing. That leads some rescuers to believe maybe the men made it back down the mountain and are holed up somewhere other than on the 11,000-foot peak.
ABC's Alex Stone in Hood River, Oregon. He was once America's top spy. Today, Robert Gates is the number one man at the Pentagon. Here's ABC's Steve Taylor.
The expectation about Gates is that he will be a less feisty defense secretary than Donald Rumsfeld, and one not tied to old policies in Iraq and elsewhere. Whether Gates will ever be as close to President Bush as Rumsfeld was is an open question. Gates' appointment is seen as having been influenced by the president's father, for whom Gates worked as CIA chief. Not many top associates of George H.W. Bush have been in George W. Bush's inner circle. Steve Taylor, ABC News, Washington.
The holidays could be the last time home with family for thousands of U.S. troops. They could be heading to Iraq.
The surge now under consideration could send more than 30,000 additional U.S. troops to Iraq, making the total force there larger than at any time since the war began. The White House says no decisions have been made, but if the president decides to go through with plans for more troops, officials say the increase could last as long as a year.
ABC's Jonathan Carl at the Pentagon. There's more work today for the crew aboard the shuttle Discovery. A fourth spacewalk is planned for today. The astronauts will try and unjam a partially retracted solar wing on the International Space Station. It so far has refused to fold up. This is ABC News.
Honey, remember how I felt after swing dancing?
Oh, you got a pain reliever for your arthritis pain.
That wasn't as bad as trying tennis.
When you got something just for a sore shoulder.
But I'm done taking different pain relievers. Now I'm all Advil.
Mm-hmm.
It's my every pain reliever. Advil works wherever I hurt, and nothing's proven stronger on tough pain.
So what are we waiting for? Let's dance.
I'm all Advil. Are you all Advil?
Compared to OTC pain relievers for minor arthritis pain, use as directed.
You may be sitting there right now wondering how you're going to make it through the day. Do you worry yourself sick, beat yourself up, or put yourself down? This isn't the real you. You used to be happy and have confidence in dreams, remember? Well, it's time to get it back. You owe it to yourself to pick up the phone and call for a powerful free tape that can help you get your life back. I'm Lucinda Bassett, founder of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. Please, let me help you help yourself. Call 1-800-500-2001. That's 1-800-500-2001. 1-800-500-2001.
There are only two like it in the world, but one got a one-of-a-kind price. Here's ABC's Brad Farrell.
It's one of two known to exist, a $1,000 bill printed in 1890, known among collectors as a grand watermelon because the green-striped zeros on the back resemble fruit, and its treasury seals are printed in red, not the standard brown of that era. Only two such examples are known to exist. One was just purchased through a Dallas, Texas auction house by an art collector for $2.3 million. The other is in the museum at the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. Brad Farrell, ABC News.
You probably have at least one gift card tucked away somewhere at home. You better use it now. The National Retail Federation says there are expiration dates and limits on them. Better read the fine print before you use it. You'll probably get at least one this year, too. We're expected to spend about $25 million on them. Need to mail some holiday cards or packages. Today's the deadline to make sure they'll get there in time for Christmas if you are mailing them first class. I'm Daria Albinger. ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
This WGNU News report is brought to you by Open from American Express. I'm Peyton Colston. A St. Charles man is dead after a confrontation with police. Officers responded to a home in the 100 block of South Overbrook yesterday afternoon after 24-year-old Gregory Brodko's mother reported he was acting strangely. Police say Brodko pointed a gun at officers and refused several orders to drop the weapon. An officer shot Brodko, who died last night at an area hospital. The officer is on administrative leave. Authorities in northwest Missouri are trying to determine why seven people died yesterday in a duplex. Police found the victims yesterday afternoon at the home in the 700 block of Aaron in Kirksville. The victims' names are not being released. There's no word yet on what caused their deaths. There was reportedly a strong odor in the duplex. Two suspects are charged in the death of a St. Louis shop owner. 19-year-old Zedrick Ward and 23-year-old Travis Ratliff are each charged with second-degree murder, first-degree attempted robbery, and armed criminal action in the death of 73-year-old Jesse Taylor. A third suspect is still at large. Taylor was shot and killed last Tuesday during a robbery attempt at neighbor's store in the 4600 block of St. Louis Avenue. And a Ferguson man faces charges nearly 16 years after the murder of a teen in Lincoln County. Authorities credit a DNA match with leading them to 44-year-old Michael Dowell of Ferguson. Dowell is charged with first-degree murder in the death of Stephanie Hoagland. The Wentzville teen was found dead along Highway W in Lincoln County in January of 1991. And that's this hour's WGNU News Update. It's been brought to you by Open from American Express. Open, how American Express serves small business. To learn more, visit open.com or call 1-800-NOW-OPEN. I'm Peyton Colston reporting WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Advil. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge, an accident has been cleared, but traffic is slowing near 3rd Street. Westbound 70 at Route N, Florissant Road on the north ramp, that accident has been cleared. Expect some delays still. Eastbound 270 before McDonald Boulevard, there's an accident that's been cleared as well. There's a lot of things going on this morning. Eastbound 40 between 141 and 270, look for heavy volume going on. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley, look for everything to be flowing freely. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79, stop and go traffic. Westbound 270 from 367 through 170, look for delays possible. Northbound 270 between before Gravoy, look for slow traffic there. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270, expect heavy volume. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge are starting to stack up at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Advil. You don't need different pain relievers for different pains. Wherever you hurt, Advil works, the every pain reliever. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, cloudy, cooler, 20% chance of light rain this morning, otherwise steady temps in the 40s. This evening, mostly cloudy, colder with a low in the mid-30s. Tuesday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 40s. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy, but they're saying the high will be around 50 degrees. Currently, we have 42 degrees and clouds. Lambert Field is reporting 43. Stay tuned now for more of the award-winning Wake Up Call with your host, Liz Brown. She's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with the duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry. Tonight.
Welcome, 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 welcome to another edition of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen Watch with Lewis Reed. Good morning, Lewis.
Good morning.
How are you?
Great.
Good deal. Well, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this morning, a lot of issues to cover. And I think I would kind of like to start with, Lewis, if you don't mind, something that we talked about last week, which a piece of legislation I think that is really an interesting piece of legislation. I was, when we were delivering blankets, and by the way, thank you for your support with the blanket drive, on Friday, when we were out delivering blankets on Saturday night, we were driving through the downtown area looking for folks that needed help and assistance, and I was just marveling at how much emphasis and how much effort has been put into the downtown area. And that's why I think that this piece of legislation that was introduced by Phyllis Young is a pretty significant piece of authority and is going to have a pretty significant impact if this bill is passed. Can you reacquaint us with this piece of legislation? What is this?
Well, earlier this summer we put in place a Modessa district, and Modessa is the Missouri Downtown Economic Stimulus Act, and what it allows us to do is to target resources to rebuilding the infrastructure to help to stimulate business growth in the downtown area. There's a Modessa district in Kansas City, and this is in Modessa district that we now have in downtown. The other thing that it allows you to do is to direct 50% of the sales tax and of the payroll tax back into the support of a project. And in this case, it's a $25 million project, which includes sidewalks and streets and curbs and improvements in various parts of that Modessa district that was defined downtown.
And who decides who is within the Modessa district?
Well, it's done by ordinance.
Okay,
and
we're going to continue that, okay, when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. But I'd like to have that discussion of who is in it, who decides who's in it, and some other issues attached to this. We'll be back. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Alderman Lewis Reed. This is the Aldermanic Watch. Stay with us.
To your hometown. It's the original magical musical. It's a
memory to last 9 lifetimes. Don't miss your chance to introduce your family to the wonders of live theater with the magic, the mystery, the memory of the Cats 25th Anniversary Tour. See it live on stage, then take the memory home forever with the Universal Studios home video. Coming to the Fox Theater December 27th through 31st. Tickets on sale now at MetroTix. Presented by the U.S. Bank Broadway Series. It's your last chance to see the 25th Anniversary Tour of Cats.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Ring-a-ling. Hear them ring, soon it will be Christmas Day.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air, there's a feeling of Christmas. Children laughing, people passing, meeting smile after smile.
Christmas time in the city.
Welcome back. My name is Liz Brown. We are doing, because it's Monday at 7 a.m., we are taking some time to spend with Alderman Lewis Reed as we talk about the things that are going on in the Board of Aldermen with the Aldermanic Watch. And we're talking about this this bill by Phyllis Young, this Modessa bill. Something like this exists in Kansas City. And one of the things that I was asking you about on the way out of the break of, this area is going to get lots of new money, right? Lots of additional money.
Yes.
And lots of additional money for businesses, sidewalks, those types of things.
Yes, it's going to get this area, the Modessa district, will receive in this first pass about $25 million is what this first pass is looking at to rebuilding the infrastructure. And but see, one of the things that has to happen to qualify for the state funding, right? Because what happens is that the state allows you to take 50% of the incremental growth in those in sales and payroll taxes and roll it back into the Modessa district to pay for a specific project improvements. So, but the challenge here is to prove to the state that the businesses that are coming into the Modessa district is indeed new business or new employment that's coming into the city. For example, if you have a business that resides currently in the city right outside of the Modessa district and it moves within the Modessa district, that business would not qualify for those funds because the state would view that as not incremental growth or incremental increase in revenue. It allows you to, like, if there's a business over in Illinois that we are attracting to Missouri, so it's new tax revenue to the state of Missouri that's moving into our Modessa district, then it allows us to recapture 50% of those funds to pay for infrastructure improvements.
So any business that already exists in the city of St. Louis right now would gain no benefit in moving into the Modessa district.
That would be my understanding of the way it operates, yes.
But if I had a new business that I wanted to start and I moved into the Modessa district, I would be entitled to those funds.
Certainly.
Okay. And in terms of the district, the physical boundaries of this district, what wards does this encompass?
It encompasses largely the 7th Ward, which is Phyllis Young's ward, and it picks up a couple blocks of the 5th Ward and about one or two blocks of the 6th Ward.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mainly that core downtown area from the riverfront up into about Tucker, one or two blocks past Tucker.
How successful? Well, first of all, how do you measure the success of a program like this, and what does it look like in Kansas City?
The way I would measure, just from the the person walking the streets, what they should see in the coming years from a program like this is you'll see various street improvements happening. You'll see very targeted project plans being moved forward with throughout the district and
what's
the street
strength. What's the target plan? What does that mean?
Like, for example, you can put together a targeted project plan that includes, various streetscape improvements like we did along Washington Avenue, where you have the lighting down the center of the streets.
Mm-hmm.
You have the pavers on the sidewalks. The special lighting, the street lighting along that flanks the north and south sides of Washington Avenue. Those types of targeted projects within that district happening, you'll see those types of things happening throughout that district, and that's how you can see the results of.
So let's say I have a spa business. Okay, I've just decided I'm going to open up a spa business. I get some property in the Modessa area. What can I, as an individual business owner, ask for or expect for, and who decides whether or not I'm going to be entitled to that money?
Well, what you can ask for is anything that's in the public right away,
okay.
Right? Because basically anytime you're using tax money, whether it's the half-cent sales tax funds through the city or whether it's this Modessa tax funds coming back from the state, those funds are for the most part or for the full part should be used in the public right away. So in this case, if you were going to be opening up a spa business, you would ask for things, sidewalk improvements, streetscape improvements, maybe planters along the street, on the streetscape. You can work with the adjoining neighbors, all up and down your block and ask for a special lighting enhancement package. Those types of things are the types of things that you would be looking for. If you're near a park, you can ask for improvements to the park. The things that make your environment better.
Visually, just like looking at the environment.
Exactly.
And so who decides whether or not I get some of this money? How does that
work? Well, it would go to the Modessa board. It's a 9-member board.
Mm-hmm.
One member appointed by the St. Louis Board of Education and 8 members appointed by the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
So it would go to that board, and that board would have to
vote on it.
But then it also has to be approved by the state, because the state would have to understand that the revenue that you're going to be collecting from this new business, this spa business,
mm-hmm.
is a business that did not
exist prior to my move in the city of St. Louis, didn't exist prior to
exactly.
That. So basically this is an incentive to businesses outside of the state of Missouri.
Yes.
Or can you come in from Kansas City and move into the Modessa and be considered a new business?
I would say that would be a new business. That's incremental revenue, because if that business, I believe the city could put forward a case that business has an opportunity to move, we need to keep them within the state. Keeping them within the state would be putting them in this Modesto district in St. Louis. Otherwise, they would have an opportunity to move outside of the state.
What is the Downtown Economic Stimulus Authority? What is that?
That's that nine-member board I was talking about that, eight members are appointed by the mayor, one member is appointed by the St. Louis Board of Education, and they oversee the Modesto district and the funding component of it, and they apply and work to get the funding for Modesto.
Can you give us some of the names of some of the people that we have on this board? It's not a complete list, but just a flavor of the types of people that are on this board.
You have Kathleen Brady, and she's, over at St. Louis University.
Mm-hmm.
And Laura Goodwin, Sheila Hudson.
Susan Strouder?
Yes,
Susan Strouder and
Dorothy White Coleman.
And Dorothy White Coleman is an attorney. I know she's an attorney downtown. So these are some of the people that have been appointed by Francis Lay's office.
Yes, okay. Francis Lay.
And how long do they serve for a period of time?
Yes, for the most part, most of the board members will serve a three-year term.
A three-year term. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when will we come up for a vote on this particular piece of legislation?
Well, this is...
Is this being fast-tracked?
Yes. This has passed out and is moving forward.
Okay.
What's happening now is working with the state to get the funding, the first $25 million funding package pushed through.
Very good. 1-877-920-WGNU. D, good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Reed, so if there's a state takeover of our Board of Education, the mayor would be in charge of all of Modesto?
Sorry, I missed it.
Okay. If there thanks, D. If there is a state takeover of the St. Louis Board of Education, the question would be, would Francis Lay then be able to appoint everybody on the Downtown Economic Stimulus Authority?
Well, if there's a state takeover of our Board of Education, then it would be my understanding that three-member board that would be appointed, one by the mayor, and that board would have to make that appointment. But it wouldn't impact us in the near future because these appointments have already been made. The
mm-hmm.
people that are on there will be on there for the next two or three years.
Next 2 or 3 years. Yeah. We're going to take a break, folks. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Board of Aldermen Watch. I am here, the Automatic Watch. I am here with Alderman Lewis Reed. We will be back to continue more of our conversation. There's a new zoning thing on the horizon we're going to talk about when we come back. Stay with us.
Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Advil. Eastbound 70 between T.R. Hughes and 79, disabled vehicle on the right shoulder and it's back up through K. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Lindbergh. Look for slow traffic in pockets. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Look for everything on the move. Westbound 270 is rolling steady into West Florissant, but some delays are possible between Old Halls Ferry and West Florissant. Northbound 270 between Gravois and 44, look for some slow traffic there. Northbound 55 between Butler Hill and 270, expect heavy volume there. Westbound 5570 from 64 onto the PSB, it's slow. And all your other approaches into downtown, you can expect some slow traffic at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Advil. Advil PM tonight, spend less time lying awake with annoying aches and pains and more time asleep when you switch from Tylenol PM to new Advil PM. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday, cloudy, cooler, 20% chance of light rain this morning, near steady temps in the mid-40s. This evening, mostly cloudy, colder, with a low in the mid-30s. For Tuesday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 40s. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high around 50. Currently, we have clouds and 42 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, this is Danny Glover, and you're listening to the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown on WGNU.
Hi, this is now Hall of Famer Wade Boggs, and I'd like to talk to you about another exclusive group that I belong to that has changed my life. I'm talking about the thousands of guys who, just like me, have decided to take control of their hair loss and regrow their hair permanently with the pros at Medical Hair Restoration. The best thing about this club is that you see the rewards every day. Having my hair back has made me look and feel younger than I have in years. And that's the ultimate vote of confidence.
If you're balding or thinning, Medical Hair Restoration, the nation's leader in microsurgical hair transplantation, wants to send you a free DVD package explaining just how easy and painless their hair replacement procedure is. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832. Take control of your hair loss and get this free information package sent to you with tons of before and after pictures and testimonials. There's no cost, no obligation. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832.
This is Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger, defending truth, fighting bad guys, and sometimes wearing a mask. A little history, a little entertainment, current events, a lot of good fun, and healthy debate. Call me, argue. If you're wrong, I will disarm you. But have no fear. The Sloan Ranger never shoots to kill. That's weekdays 5 to 6 on WGNU.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Giddy-yap, 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 let's go. Let's look at the show. We're riding in a wonderland of snow. Giddy-yap, 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 it's grand, just holding your hand. We're gliding along with the song of a wintry fairyland. Our cheeks are nice and rosy and comfy cozy, are we? We're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be. Let's take that road before us and sing a chorus or two. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Automatic Watch. My name is Liz Brown. I am here with Louis Reed, and now Irene J. Smith has joined us as well. Let me get to a couple of callers here. Miss Lindsay.
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was calling to ask Mr. Reed, is he aware that the St. Louis public schools have a $1 billion money pot, and how much of that is, that's one of the reasons why they want this takeover. They're so anxious, and the public needs to weigh in on this. And how can the public weigh in on the school takeover? Because the schools are really not as bad as the Post Dispatch and the mayor have printed, published it to be. But that money pot is sitting there, and when, once Slay and Shamel and Danforth get their hands on it, the public will be, you know, just left out. And the parents, and I'm appealing to any parents who's listening to this, to get down to the school board or get the Liz Brown show or something. But what can we do to stop the takeover?
Thanks for your call. That is a topic that is on everybody's mind in terms of the future of the St. Louis public schools. And I think, Louis, that it's a fair question of, are we better off with people now the suggestion or the recommendation that's been made by this particular board or this particular group of people who were all people that had something to do with what the schools were prior to today's day. Who do we as a community want somebody else now to put another layer of bureaucracy and another layer of control over the St. Louis public schools?
Yeah, I don't know that we're, just in my belief, I don't think that we're better off under a takeover.
Mm-hmm.
And the caller asked, how do you get involved and what can we do about that? One of the ways you can get involved immediately is by beginning to contact your elected officials. I think you call your alderman, you call the mayor's office. You also need to show up in force at the school board hearings and voice your opinions about those things and let them know that you are engaged and that you're involved and you want to make a difference in this system.
And in terms of the impact of this, Louis, we are defined by the quality of schools that we have in our community. And I guess one of the things that is going on with the people that I'm talking to and the people that are calling this show is there appears to be an ongoing attempt to remove the control of the schools from the hands of the citizens. Because basically what we're talking about is all of a sudden, you as an elected official, I'd love to hear your take on this. We're saying that elected officials shouldn't be allowed to do their job. We need to put somebody over elected officials to run them from running their job.
And that, again, it does add an additional layer.
Mm-hmm. An unnecessary layer?
Certainly unnecessary additional layer. We've gone through a lot of changes in our school board over the last couple of years. I think we're now starting to get from under some of the problems that we were having in the early part of
when during Roberti and all of that time.
Yes, so I think we should have the opportunity to see if we can continue to rebuild our school system.
And what is the role of the Board of Aldermen in this?
Really, no direct role, because we do not have any direct control or say-so within the school board itself.
But let's say that, let's say that you were the president of the Board of Aldermen, okay? Let's say that even though legally the Board of Aldermen may not have authority to demand that the schools do anything, but then neither does the mayor.
Yeah.
So what would you in your role as president of the Board of Aldermen situation?
What I would be doing in this situation, of course, in this situation, you do have an opportunity because you would be handle one of the appointments to that school board, to this takeover board. But one of the things that I would have been doing very early on in this process is engaging in this process, talking to the parents, talking to the school board members, to make sure we didn't get to this point where we have a situation of a state takeover. And part of what you do to make sure that you head these things off is you engage very early on in the process, like Alderwoman Irene Smith did early on in the process, to try to make the difference then. You don't wait till, this is equivalent to waiting till it rains to buy an umbrella.
And I'm hearing right now, what's the phrase that I'm looking for? A deafening silence from the current president of the Board of Aldermen on this issue, because it seems to me that, again, not only do you have the power of authority, but Louis, don't you have the bully pulpit?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you have the ability to convene a special committee to hold hearings on what's happening? Could you do that?
You certainly do, and that's what I was talking about when I said you engage in that process very early on. When you see that the problems are on the horizon, you can be convening hearings. You can have, you can bring things before the board to discuss, for discussion purposes only. There are a lot of things that you can do to raise awareness, to engage parents, to make sure that you're not sitting here with the state takeover.
And Irene, you were involved in this and the school issue from the get-go, from the first efforts of privatization from the Slay administration and the efforts of Bill Roberti. You were on the board at that time. What were some of the things that you asked the president of the Board of Aldermen then to do, and were they done or were they not done?
Well, basically what we did, and Alderman Bosley was instrumental as well, we introduced bills that called for convening of hearings regarding particular issues that were going on in the school. With respect to, say, one, Roberti receiving a waiver from Kit King, which, as we know, after Roberti got that waiver,
the destruction began.
The destruction began. We plummeted in accreditation mm-hmm. points under a superintendent who was uncertified, unqualified, no interest in teaching, had never taught. So we asked that there be a meeting, and would have gone to Intergovernmental Affairs, which Tom Byers would indicate he would not hold a hearing on it. Certainly the president at that time could have established a special committee on schools.
We could have had those hearings.
We could have had those hearings. He could have appointed anyone as the chair of that committee. It didn't have to be based on seniority, anything. You know, incidentally, you know, we investigated the health department. When I was on the board, I was appointed. Even though I was a junior alderman, I was appointed to chair that committee. So he could have did that if he had some concern. But I think what you have is a president of the board who really isn't, you know, grew up, you know, Catholic school system.
Like Francis Slay.
You know, very little involvement with the public school system other than the fact that his wife works for the public school system. I guess she still does. But other than that, or really have a disconnect with the public school system and to some way kind of look down their noses at the public school system.
So, Lewis, if you were in that position, what would be some of the things that you would be doing right now? Okay, I get the piece about there would have been an earlier engagement, but what would be some of the things? Because I'm hearing, again, from a lot of people that they are just devastated by the idea of now we don't control our school, our police department. We don't control our board of elections. Now we won't be able to control our public schools as well?
Yes. What I would be doing right now, you know, the people that will be appointed as that three-member board, that's really critical. You know,
do we concede right now? I mean, before we get to the place of the appointment of it, do we concede that this is what's going to be going on?
No, I think we need to be doing two things. The first thing we need to be doing at this point is thinking about who that three-member board is and thinking about the makeup of that. Also, we still need to do everything we can do to head off the process, to still engage in it, to make sure that if we do have this takeover and we appoint a three-member board, that it will be directed in such a way that it'll be a positive thing so that we can turn around and get back on track, because we're at a point now that it's going to be hard to turn it around.
1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. This is the Aldermanic Watch, and my name is Liz Brown. I am here with Alderman Lewis Reed. We're talking about the St. Louis Board of Aldermen, and Irene J. Smith has also joined us. We will get back to some of your calls, concerns, and comments. This is a very, very, very important issue. Stay with us.
In the beginning, there were but a few that gave birth to a new fad in music called rock and roll. They were referred to as the Legends of Rock. And now Goldie's Music has compiled the greatest hits of three of these legends: Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, Chuck Berry.
Well, I'm gonna write a little letter, I'm gonna mail it to my local DJ. You broke my will, but what a thrill. This is great. Ball of fire.
Woo, you got it, Miss Molly. Sure like.
This 3-CD package is not available in stores, so call toll-free right now and order your very own copy of The Legends of Rock. Call 1-800-577-3995. That's 1-800-577-3995. 1-800-577-3995.
It's time for this hour's WGNU Global News Update. I'm Peyton Colston. A possible breakthrough in diabetes treatment. The inability of the pancreas to make insulin results in diabetes. Recently, U.S. and Canadian scientists say they've determined defective nerve endings in the pancreas may draw immune system proteins that wrongly attack the organ, destroying its ability to make insulin, thus causing diabetes. Writing in the journal Cell, Dr. Hans-Michael Dosch and his colleagues say they've been able to repair the defect by injecting a piece of protein or peptide and have cured diabetic mice, quote, overnight. In his words, quote, it's very effective in reversing diabetes. Scientists report the faulty nerve endings in the pancreas did not secrete enough of the peptides to keep a sufficient flow of insulin going. Clinical studies on people will begin soon. Such trials could take several years. Dr. Dosch says, quote, whether we can reverse the process, I don't know, but I think we can certainly impact on the major physiological problem, and that's insulin sensitivity. I'm Peyton Colston with this hour's WGNU Global News Update.
Just like a well-built house needs a good design and plan, so do our lives. This is Sandy.
And this is Bobby.
Two life coaches. Please join us as we take your questions about designing your life. We'll discuss life planning, following through, and the obstacles that get in the way.
This is your weekly chance to get some answers you've been looking for. We hope you'll join us on The Design Life on WGNU every Monday afternoon from 4 to 5.
I hope you never lose yourself.
The people, the issues affecting your life, right here, right now, on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back to the Aldermanic Watch. My name is Liz Brown. I am here with Alderman Lewis Reed, and we're talking about education. We're talking about the role of the president of the Board of Aldermen on this, the role of the Board of Aldermen on this very, very, very critical issue. Let me get to some more of our callers here. James.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
Liz, is there any numbers? Can you give out numbers to call these officials try to stop this this procedure on the state takeover? Can you give out numbers? And can you also, is it too late to get a court injunction to stop it?
Nothing is in stone. This is a recommendation from a group of people that were appointed by a governor that is opposed to public education. Nothing is in stone. There certainly needs to be efforts by the public to demonstrate what their position is on this. The majority of the public does not want this, and the majority of the public has to speak out on this. And thanks for that question and concern. When someone like a James asks, what can we do about this, Lewis, what do you say?
I said call 622-3287, the Board of Aldermen. Ask for your alderman. Tell them where you live and voice that opinion directly to him, that alderman, and tell them that you would like this thing stop. I think you also, you know, call the mayor's office and let them know that you're not in favor of this state takeover. Show up at the school board hearings, let them know that you're not in favor of this state takeover. But what's more important when we take a look at, you know, stopping this, I think we definitely need to do everything we can do to stop this process. But the other thing that we need to focus on are the resources, mm-hmm. because what our schools need are resources. They need smaller class sizes. They need to enhance the mentor program. They need to work to build quality education within our public schools. That is the linchpin to everything in a child's life when you take a look at what they're going to be when they grow up and the ultimate success.
Jump in and say one little thing. Also call the president of the Board of Aldermen when you call 622-3287.
And ask where they are.
That's where they are.
Ask where are you on
that's
this
right.
issue? There's been a deafening silence from the president of the Board of Aldermen on this very, very, very important issue. Heck, your wife works in the district. Surely you have an opinion and a position on this.
Not as long as your wife is taken care of.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Well, there you go. At one of the callers, you kept using the word money pot. When they referred to the city of St. Louis and the St. Louis public schools. One of the issues here also, Louis, is you talked about all the things that it doesn't take rocket science. They need resource. They need mentors. They need that issue of security. They need well-paid teachers. But don't we also have to be constantly building a firewall against those who want to come and get privatized and get at this billion-dollar money pot?
Oh, yes. Yes, we definitely do. We need to, work to stabilize our school district and bring up the test scores across the entire district. We also need to be aware of the fact that there are those that would like a school takeover. There are those that would like to see more privatization of our school district.
1-877-920-WGNU.
You know what's problematic about them allowing the mayor to have an appointment? As you may recall, under the state statute, the mayor appoints the individual that does the auditing of the district. So for the mayor to be allowed to also have an appointee on this board, should it take place, and then at the same time appoint the CPA firm that will audit the district, to me is problematic.
And also, Francis Slay appointed Veronica O'Brien. Francis Slay supported Ron Jackson. Francis Slay brought in Vince Schemel. Francis Slay involved the Black Leadership Roundtable in this process.
Supported Kit King and giving Roberti a waiver.
Absolutely. So all of the decisions that have led to the state that the school board finds itself in right now came from the decision-making pen and action of Francis Slay. So it is, to me, beyond insanity that we would now say, okay, the two guys, one guy who doesn't care about public education and another guy who messed up public education, that they would be the people that make the decision about this. And the idea, Louis, that the third person who would make the decision about this would be the president of the Board of Aldermen, and we haven't heard boo from the president of the Board of Aldermen on this issue.
Yeah, and never have I don't even know that I've ever seen him at a school board meeting.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that we need to be aware of is that if you're not involved, you should not complain about the results. And what we have here is a president of the board that hasn't been involved, and I think it's important for him to stand up and weigh in on this.
Absolutely. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to us. Kathy.
Yes, good morning to all three of you. I was wondering, are the aldermen allowed to speak at the school board meetings? Because to my knowledge, I haven't seen any of them speaking there.
Yeah, well, that's not true.
That's not true.
They have come. Dorothy Kerner spoke just this past school board meeting.
Okay, and Louis, in terms of speaking at the school board meeting, that's what older people, there's no rule against that.
No.
1-877-920-WGNU. Charles Quincy Troop, alderman from the first ward.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let me just say that the president of the board of aldermen currently is the most dysfunctional leader of a legislative body that I've seen in my entire political career. The Board of Aldermen could do a lot of things if it had a visionary leadership. The current president of the Board of Aldermen has absolutely no vision at all and has no idea as to what a legislative body is, and that's why the Board of Aldermen is dysfunctional. I think, and that's why I'm supporting Reed for president of the Board of Aldermen, because the current president is interplanetary when it comes to leadership. But let me just go back and try to remind.
Okay, we have about 1 minute here, Quince.
Well, it was the state that gave us Roberti, right? It was the state king that allowed the St. Louis school system to have a non-certified superintendent at a time when the St. Louis Board of school system was already one of 50 or 60 provisional school districts in the state. So what makes anybody think that the state care about what happened to the kids in the city of St. Louis? What everybody need to be focusing on is that the state only goal is to withdraw some of the additional funds that flow into the city of St. Louis
and hand them out to other
and
folks
give them
too
to the rest of the district
exactly
across the state. So anybody to say that the state is more concerned about the St. Louis school district than the elected officials on the board is completely insane.
And it's also insane to lay this at the feet of Veronica O'Brien from the perspective of we're doing it because Veronica O'Brien has lost her mind. There's an election that's coming up in April. There will be a new president of the Board of Education. So why on earth would people be tripping about a position that didn't that lasted a year?
Well, because
not only that, it's not her. I mean,
even if I mean, but you know what I'm saying.
Able, you know, you had Bruford in there. He was also appointed, but the power structure was not able to control the people
because we live in a democracy.
They control the board, and that's now this is how they can get control again by getting the governor to do the appointment.
Thanks for your call. And going back to the point that Quincy made about the missing in action of Shrewsbury, the president of the Board of Aldermen, these are the times that critical times that we should be hearing from and seeing a president of the Board of Aldermen. Isn't that right?
Most definitely. Most definitely. He's the leader of our legislative branch of city government, and we really need strong engagement of that branch of city government at this point in time in the history of the city. I also would like to thank Quincy for his support.
We're going to bring it to an end. It looks like we're coming to an end already. It's over already. An hour is gone already. Well,
next Monday is Christmas.
That is true. That is true. Next Monday is Christmas, so that means that we won't be meeting here, but we will be meeting probably the following Monday.
The following Monday is New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, so we probably won't be meeting here.
Do some
well.
Tuesdays. Shift.
Okay, we'll be back. We'll be back. We're not going to go 2 weeks without having a conversation.
All right.
We're not going to go 2 weeks. Lewis, thank you so much, and thank you again for your support with the blanket drive.
Yeah, I do. I want to really send a shout-out to Lewis and Alderman Troop. Really the only alderman that, to our knowledge, who were involved this year. I was a little disappointed in that, but I know there's a lot of need out there. But we certainly appreciate the support of Alderman Reed and his staff, and Alderman Troop, you did a yeoman's job. We led the pack.
Thank you both, and I will be back with my guest for the next hour. Stay with me.
Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa
Santa Cutie and fill my stocking with a duplex and check.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. A helicopter lands on Oregon's Mount Hood where rescuers are looking for two missing hikers. Captain Mike Babish of the Oregon National Guard says they will not let up until they find
them. These folks have been working very hard over the past several days. It's taken a toll on them, but they remain dedicated to making sure that they get answers for this family.
The body of the third climber was found yesterday in a snow cave. The nation's new defense secretary is on the job. ABC's Ann Compton has details from the White House.
With only the official White House photographer as the witness, Robert Gates took the oath of office as the new defense secretary. We know that White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolton administered the oath. We don't know what advice Gates will give the president on Iraq. Gates was a member of the Iraq Study Group, which recommended pulling out combat forces, leaving only U.S. military trainers. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
Another spacewalk today for the Shuttle Discovery crew. This one was not originally on the schedule. The astronauts will try to unjam a stuck solar panel on the International Space Station. Going to the post office today, you should plan to stand in line. More from ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey.
You are running out of time. Can't wait any longer. Today is the last day you can mail that Christmas card or package and expect it to get there on time.
Even during the holidays.
The post office has been trying to make it easy for you.
With free package pickup.
But after today, you'll have to send it express or priority if you want it there by Christmas.
FedEx.
You do have UPS alternatives.
DHL.
But tick-tock, Christmas is coming. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
About three-quarters of us are done with our holiday shopping, compared with 67% this time last year. America's research group says most of us weren't too thrilled, though, with the sales the stores offer this year. This is ABC News.
I know not how to express my devotion to so fair a form. I want a brighter word than bright, a fairer word than fair. I almost wish we were butterflies and lived but three summer days. Three such days with you I could fill with more delight than 50 common years could ever contain. This is how the poet John Keats said, I love you. This Christmas, say something just as beautiful without saying a word. A diamond is forever.
I'm cruising in my ride, 16 switches. Gotta get my floss on, watch out.
Life may never be clean, but with Hoover, your floors can be. Hoover FloorMate cleans all your hard floors. Hoover Wind Tunnel 2 Upright vacuums your carpets. Buy them together and get up to a $100 mail-in rebate. So use Hoover and keep it clean. Offer varies. See Hoover.com and participating dealers for details. Expires 1-7-07.
Britney Spears topped a new list, but it's probably not one she would like to be on. Here's ABC's Karen Chase.
Princess Britney Spears has been coronated the queen of viralvideochart.com.
I feel like I'm missing out.
Missing out on what?
On life.
Number one on the website's list of most popular clips is a burping Britney talking about her belief in time travel as portrayed in Back to the Future.
I think people can do that, and I think some people are ahead of us.
She was ahead of her ex, FedEx. Video of Kevin Federline allegedly getting her I Want a Divorce text message was number two on the viral video chart. At number three, the Michael Richards racial tirade.
Shut up!
Karen Chase, ABC News.
Well, before you make that trip to the post office today, if you have packages and cards you need to send and you want the cheaper rates, remember, as we told you earlier, this is the deadline for first-class mail. To get there in time for Christmas, after today, it's traditionally just the more expensive express stuff. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
This WGNU News Update is brought to you by Open from American Express. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news this morning, class will be in session as usual today at Northwest High School in Cedar Hill after a bomb scare Friday. Authorities evacuated the building Friday night to search the school for explosives after a student was caught writing a threatening message on a bathroom wall. No explosives were found at the school, but investigators found, quote, suspicious items at the student's home. School officials say there were no direct threats made against the building. Police have no suspects in custody in the fatal shooting of a teenager in North St. Louis. 17-year-old Corrado Peebles was shot and killed Saturday in the 4700 block of Vernon. Witnesses told police the victim and another man were arguing before the shooting. Funeral arrangements are pending for a local soldier killed in action in Iraq. 22-year-old Matthew Clark died Thursday when a roadside bomb detonated. Clark was a graduate of Ladue High School. In Bridgeton, a man's dead after a weekend crash in St. Genevieve County. The Missouri Highway Patrol says 22-year-old Joshua McHugh's car went down an embankment and overturned off I-55 early Saturday morning. McHugh was thrown from the car. The Lincoln County fifth grader injured in a construction mishap at her school is recovering at home. 10-year-old Amy Twelman was hospitalized last Thursday after a piece of metal debris fell through the ceiling at William R. Capel Elementary School. Amy underwent surgery to put a metal plate in her head. She was released from the hospital Saturday evening. That's a WGNU News update brought to you by Open from American Express. Open how American Express serves small business. To learn more, visit open.com or call 1-800-NOW-OPEN. I'm Peyton Colston reporting WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Tahiti Village. 70 eastbound after T.R. Hughes, disabled vehicle in right shoulder. There's a short slowdown past the scene. Eastbound 70 from Zumbel, look for an accident. It's been cleared. Some residual delays back through 370. Westbound 70 after the depressed section. There was a stalled tractor trailer that's been moved, and traffic is moving well now. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Lindbergh, look for slow traffic in pockets. Westbound 40 between Bellevue and Hanley, it is slow. Westbound 270 between Old Halls Ferry and West Florissant, look for delays. Northbound 270 at Gravois and 44 is slow. 55 northbound between Butler Hill and 270, expect heavy volume there. Westbound 5570 at 64 into the PSB, look for slow traffic there. Northbound Route 3 between 8th Street and the Poplar Street Bridge, you've got slow traffic. And westbound Kingbridge traffic is slowing back from the gravel pit all the way into the landing. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Tahiti Village. Why haven't you called Tahiti Village yet? You've heard Tanya Roberts on the radio offering couples complimentary three-day, two-night hotel in Las Vegas. So call today, 877-57-VEGAS. That's 877-57-VEGAS. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, look forward to cloudy, cooler, 20% chance of rain this morning. Otherwise, near temperatures around the mid-40s this evening, mostly cloudy, colder with a low in the mid-30s. Tuesday, partly cloudy, high in the upper 40s, and Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high expected around 50. Currently, we have 42 degrees and clouds. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your new or your traffic and your weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down. chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry. Tonight.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown, and at this hour we are going to have a conversation with Stephen Kernan. What do you do in a society where dying is changing? What do you do? We live in a world where people, according to author Stephen Kernan, people are dying differently. And if death in America is changing, the question we have to ask is whether or not healthcare has adapted to this reality. If dying in America is changing, why aren't our cultural attitudes, why aren't our healthcare policies, and why aren't our medical communities changing too? This is a very important issue. It's a very important issue because about 6,500 people die in America every single day, and fewer than 1,200 of them die at home with their loved ones and free of pain. Why? Why is that? Join my conversation with Stephen P. Kernan as we talk about his book, Last Rites, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System. My name is Liz Brown. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Now Goldie's Music has compiled the very best of Dean Martin in a 3-CD package called
Everybody Loves Somebody Sometimes.
Yes, you get 36 of the very best of Dean Martin.
Send me the pillow that you dream of.
This greatest hits package is not available in stores, but only available through this special radio offer. It's the very best of Dean Martin.
You're nobody till somebody loves you. So find yourself somebody to love.
All songs have been digitally remastered for the highest possible quality. Add the very best of Dean Martin to your collection today. Here's how to order. Call 1-800-577-3995. That's 1-800-577-3995. 1-800-577-3995.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
so very nice. I'll hold your hands there just like I.
My mother will start to worry.
Beautiful,
welcome back.
Hurry.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour, we're going to be talking about dying in America. My guest is journalist Stephen Kernan. He is joining us from northern Vermont to talk about his book, Last Rites, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I am outstanding. How are you?
The same. Delighted to be with you.
Very good to have you. Stephen, you make the point that death in America is changing. How so?
Well, it's changing dramatically, Liz, and I'll say some numbers at you, but I think that it will reflect what your experience and what your listeners' experience has already been. 30 years ago, most people in America died of sudden causes. Excuse me, heart attacks, strokes, and accidents. And we mobilized as a society, everything from EMTs to 911 to people giving up a Saturday to learn CPR, airbags in cars, all kinds of things. And believe it or not, it worked. And our life expectancy is longer than it's ever been. But now we die slowly. And this is a terrifying thing in some ways, that we look our mortality in the eye as it comes in the form of Alzheimer's or Lou Gehrig's disease or primarily cancer. But there's also all kinds of opportunities that are presented if life is ending slowly for us to really fulfill our last wishes, get our affairs in order, maybe make some spiritual preparation. And the book partly identifies that change and partly identifies how the health system hasn't evolved to reflect those changes.
And let's talk about that, because if we're going to talk about the fact that death is changing, you make the point that the medical system is not.
That's right. We're still using sort of the crisis approach that worked so well when people were dying suddenly. We're still using that approach for people who are dying slowly. You know, if I get in a car accident or I have a heart attack, I want intensive care medicine. I want those things that are saving lives by the thousands every day. But if I'm dying very slowly of Alzheimer's disease or of cancer or something like that, it doesn't make much sense to use a car accident approach with me. And what a lot of the research shows, this isn't my research, I should add, this is, you know, published scientific medical research, is that people are enduring enormous amounts of untreated pain. Medical expenses are now the leading cause of personal bankruptcy. It's not credit cards. And, you know, if someone's in intensive care, their family's allowed to visit 15 minutes at a time every few hours. And people really find themselves dealing with too much medicine, or at least finding themselves struggling to decide for their loved ones how much is enough. At what point is it futile, and is at what point should you just be working to make someone as comfortable as possible? It starts really right at the beginning of medical school. Medical students aren't taught how to treat someone who's dying or how to manage their pain, and continues right up to the way the insurance system reimburses hospitals and where their revenues come from. There's a lot of opportunity for improvement.
And when we talk about medical schools and they're dealing with or teaching students to deal with the issue of dying, how many schools out there even require that the students take a course on dying?
Well, it's a great question, Liz, with an amazing answer. There are about five, some say six, but really five medical schools in America that require students to learn how to care for people who are dying. Of all the medical textbooks, there have been two big studies that were done. Of all the textbooks, 2% of them even mention that patients die.
And one true fact, Stephen, is that all of us die.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, none of us get out of this alive.
Well, so, everyone except you and me, Liz, right?
Okay, yeah, other than us, everybody
right.
else is going.
You know, you can't get out of medical school in America today without 200 hours of obstetrics. You can't get out of medical school without a lot of training in the cardiovascular systems, nutrition, and so on. And no one is saying that there needs to be less training in these areas, but it's the neglect of something that 100% of patients are going to experience. And doctors simply aren't trained in knowing when somebody's life is approaching its end, and knowing when to stop seeking a cure when a cure is not possible, and instead look to maximize the patient's comfort, make life as good as it can be for as long as it can be.
And is there a reason for that, Stephen? Is there an explanation for that? What do medical schools say as the reason for this?
Well, it's interesting because medical schools actually were the only people that wouldn't talk to me in the course of the research I did for this book. You know, the president of AMA and I spoke several times. You know, I interviewed many of the state's attorney generals about the legal issues and so on. Medical schools don't really want to talk about it. And, you know, I think the reasons, I guess you could look at the plus side and the minus side. The minus side, you would probably agree with me. Our culture is maybe not as grown up about aging and dying as it could be. We are a culture that really loves youth and reveres youth and vitality. So there's that part of it, which is sort of a negative side of it. But there's a plus side of it, too. You know, the American health system is really filled with the can-do attitude. We're going to map the human genome. We're going to invent an artificial heart. We're going to do everything we can to prolong life and to maximize its quality. And that's why we're a world innovator in healthcare. Maybe not the best quality care in the world, but certainly the leader in medical innovation. So I think some of that can-do attitude has been really great. However, it needs to shift now. You know, 100 years ago, it was all about infectious disease, and we were leaders in coming up with vaccines and immunizations with enormous progress. And then 30 years ago, it was these sudden causes of death, and we mobilized. And what we need is another mobilization, another shift, just like we did for sudden causes, just like we did for infectious disease. We need to build a health system that's going to care for people in the experiences and the conditions that they have today.
Should we expect, Stephen, that the push for the change is going to come from within the medical system, or is it going to come from people like baby boomers who are going to have to deal with the deaths of their parents, which will, of course, force them to have to look at their own mortality? Will it come from inside or out?
Well, I think you've already got the answer there. Think of it this way. You know, about 10 or 15 years ago, everyone was saying that the way that we were going to get our health system under control was managed care. And there were some good ideas in managed care. There was also a lot of rationing, a lot of mistrust of it. And one of the things that came out was women who were being required to go home 24 hours after having the baby. You remember the drive-by deliveries?
That's right.
Okay, so what happened is there was a lot of noise within the medical world about it, and nothing happened, really, until the healthcare consumers rose up and said, this is not right. We should not be rushing women home. Lo and behold, an act of Congress was passed guaranteeing women the option of staying in the hospital for 48 hours. I don't know that there were any studies done about how many of them did it, but the point is that the healthcare consumer became vocal. Well, here come the baby boomers of America. They're beginning to experience the loss of the first of their friends. Some of them are now, in larger numbers, they're experiencing the loss of their parents. And they're seeing that it's a catastrophe, that it's craziness, that there is no limit to the medical technology. There's no limit to the expense. There's no limit except the ones that they and their loved ones draw, the lines that they draw.
But isn't the challenge, though, Stephen? Medical schools have a difficult time of teaching their students insisting that their students learn about dying. It's difficult for us. I mean, my father told me about, I want you to read the will, you know, and I shut down. You just emotionally shut. I don't want to talk about the possibility of you or a piece of paper that indicates there will be a point in time when you're not going to be here. How do we talk about this? Because in your book, you talk about the idea of someone dying well and someone dying badly. Number one, how do we get to the place where we can talk about these things? And secondly, what is dying well and what is dying badly?
Well, all right, two big questions. The first thing is, it's great that your father's you and your father are talking about it, because they're hard conversations to have. But look, Liz, you know, we know a lot of people who have life insurance. So they've sort of done the thinking they need to do, the preparation they need to do to say, someday I'm not going to be in this world and I need to provide for my loved ones financially. We know lots of people who have wills, which means that they have thought about a world without them in it, and they've made some legal preparations so that everything they've worked for all their life doesn't go to Uncle Sam. Those things are about when you're dead. The stuff I'm talking about is not when you're dead. It is when you are still alive. And what you want to do, I mean, part of dying well is living well for as long as you're alive. And that's about having your values and your beliefs and your relationship with medicine expressed in your end-of-life care. Are you somebody who wants to bankrupt your family, getting everything possible, even when it's futile? Or are you someone who says, well, when nothing more can be done for me, let me go home and have my loved ones around. Let me get a clergyman or woman to help me with my spiritual preparation. Let's keep my pain in order and make sure I'm comfortable from a physical standpoint. You know, that's part of what was the great privilege of this book, was spending a lot of time with people whose lives were ending and with their loved ones. And there are people who managed to die beautifully. There are people who managed to die surrounded by love, having fulfilled their last wishes in really beautiful ways. It is absolutely possible.
I'm talking to author Stephen Kernan. He is the author of Last Rites, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System. My name is Liz Brown. We will be back to continue our conversation. Stay with us.
Good morning, St. Louis, 29 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Yahoo. Eastbound 70 between Cave Springs and Zumbel, slow traffic due to an earlier accident. Westbound 70 between Intercity Expressway, look for an accident there. Eastbound 40 ramp to Timberlake Manor ramp, look for a disabled truck. Eastbound 40 at Broomstick and Mason, look for heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes through 79, and traffic's easing. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry and West Florissant, look for it to be easing. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270, expect normal traffic. And northbound 270 at 44 in Big Bend is very heavy at this hour. All your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge are jammed. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Yahoo. Yahoo's Best of Answers 2006 is the year's smartest questions. Like, what are the keys to great job performance? Go to yahoo.com and click on Answers to find out. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Cloudy, cool today. Chance of showers with a high in the steady temps of 40 degrees. For this evening, mostly cloudy, colder. Low in the mid-30s. For Tuesday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 40s. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high expected of 50. Currently, we have clouds and 42 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting clouds and 43. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
School, church, civic, and other nonprofit organizations often have tight budgets. At WGNU, we understand that and remind you that we can help. If you know of a nonprofit group that would like WGNU to help promote events and ongoing programs free of charge, just send a fax with all the information to our public service department at area code 314-454-6609. Requests must be submitted 2 weeks in advance of any event. WGNU Radio reserves the right to edit or reject any submission because of time constraints and objectionable or commercial content.
Now Goldie's Music presents the ultimate 50s vocal group collection called Doo-Wop Greats. Yes, you get the Cadillacs, the Platters, the Crests, the Del Vikings, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, the Rivieras, the Kleptones, the Chantels, the Flamingos, Little Anthony and the Imperials, the Olympics, and the Five Satins, plus many more. Yes, you'll be singing along to the greatest doo-wop songs ever recorded.
I wonder, wonder
Doo-Wop Greats. All songs have been digitally remastered for the highest quality. Call now and add Doo-Wop Greats to your collection. Call 1-800-577-3995. That's 1-800-577-3995. 1-800-577-3995. Call 1-800-577-3995. That's 1-800-577-3995.
Just like a well-built house needs a good design and plan, so do our lives. This is Sandy.
And this is Bobby.
Two life coaches. Please join us as we take your questions about designing your life. We'll discuss life planning, following through, and the obstacles that get in the way.
This is your weekly chance to get some answers you've been looking for. We hope you'll join us on The Design Life on WGNU every Monday afternoon from 4 to 5.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour I'm having a conversation with journalist and author Stephen Kernan. He is the author of Last Rites, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
In your book, you talk about, you describe death as a four-part event, biological, social, financial, and spiritual. Talk to us about connecting those pieces to a person's needs when they are preparing for death.
Well, you know, most of the focus that we have today is about the biological aspects. That is, if someone we know is dying, really it's all about the medical interventions that we're going to make to keep them alive. It sure makes sense. I want to do that on behalf of my loved ones, and I want that done on my behalf. But that's really only a small piece of what's happening. There is also, you know, the social aspects, because death is such an isolating event, dying is, in our society. There are financial aspects, because all of the generally suffer a lot of untreated pain. There's really no excuse, because pain medicine isn't enormously expensive, and because pain medicines have never been more effective than they are now. Yet it is a fact that about half the people who die in hospitals and about a third of the people who die in nursing homes experience prolonged, undertreated pain.
Why?
Well, boy, it's about physicians not being trained in managing pain. It's about pain not being considered as important as the other vital signs. It's about doctors being worried that if they treat pain aggressively, that they'll be prosecuted for drug crimes. But the result is, when you know, if you're in a lot of pain, your mind is not clear, and you really that is going to override and overwhelm all the other elements that are going on in your life. Whereas if your pain is managed, then you can repair that broken relationship and mend fences. You can make financial preparations. You can make spiritual preparation. And so this is why pain is, you know, a lot of the organizations that monitor the quality of end-of-life care often start with pain management. We have a long way to go to get the medical community and the drug enforcement community to sit down together and say, look, you know, an 88-year-old woman with bone cancer is not going to become a morphine addict. She's not going to be robbing stores to support her her opium habit.
And first of all, she's 88.
That's right.
First of all, she's 88.
Exactly.
You know, and to me, that it just, Stephen, it just feels so cruel and mean that your concern is whether or not a 80-something-year-old person, a 90-something-year-old person becomes addicted. That's your biggest concern right now.
Well, it's so interesting to me. You know, when I started out this book, it had a different title, and I ended up calling it Last Rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, because I feel that it's unjust. Mm. Why should that woman suffer? I can't think of a single reason. And, you know, I've got the story in the book of a physician in California who was really aggressive about treating his patient's pain. And he was prosecuted. It was a 5-year ordeal for him. 5 years he couldn't practice. Prosecuted for drug crimes, for causing their deaths, for all sorts of nonsense. He was cleared on all of them. But you know that every other doctor in California who treats people at the end of their lives was watching that case and was prescribing less medicine as a result. There was an effort a couple of years ago where a lot of the medical community and the law enforcement community got together and said, here's some rules that we can go by so the doctors can treat pain well and not worry about being prosecuted. And it was up on the Drug Enforcement Administration's website for a month, and then it got taken down. And the posting was, you know, it needs more work. There were some inaccuracies. There were no inaccuracies. It's just the drug enforcement people didn't feel comfortable with it. So the scale has been tipped way too much on the drug enforcement side when it comes to managing people's physical pain from illness. I'm not saying the drug culture and drug crimes aren't a serious problem for America, but we also have we have 50 million Americans living with undertreated pain right now, not just people who are dying. So there's a lot of room for improvement there, and this is why I use the word rights. There are 38, I'm going to get on my high horse for a second here, Liz.
That's where I live, so go right ahead.
There are 38 states with patients' bills of rights, and they say things like, this is how your mail must be handled so it's private. You are entitled to a second opinion. You're entitled to get moved if you got an obnoxious roommate in your hospital room. 38 states plus the federal government have them. Only one, to my knowledge, and the summer changing right now, only one says you're entitled to have your pain managed. Only one says you're entitled to decent end-of-life care. So we were talking before about who's going to bring this change about. Is it going to happen in the medical system? No, because those doctors are worried about losing their practice and going to jail. It is going to take the healthcare consumer, starting with standing in the hallway saying, my mother needs pain medicine now, and I don't care if I'm waking up other patients. I'm going to make noise till you get her some pain control.
And my mind is flashing to that scene in Terms of Endearment, where the mother was standing in the hallway just screaming about, it's time for her medicine, it's time for her medicine, my daughter is in pain, and she had to act a fool. She had to absolutely act a fool to get her daughter the pain medication that she needed.
That's right. Well, you know, we are all going to need someone to advocate on our behalf, because when people die slowly, there is very often a period in which we're not conscious and we're not able to advocate on our own behalf. So we're going to need somebody to do it for us. And, you know, the person that I've chosen out of my immediate family is somebody who's going to be very outspoken and tough on my behalf. And that's, I think, you know, a reality we're all going to have to look at. And that's going to be the beginning of the change. And what I'm hoping with this book is that people will also, who have been experiencing this in the isolation of their own family tragedy, will begin to realize that they're part of a trend, and that that trend is not okay, and in fact it's even unjust. And that's why, you know, patients' bills of rights, to get those fixed, that means we got to be voting for different people, or at least it has to be a campaign issue. How are you going to deal with people's untreated pain? How are you going to deal with the aging of America? Mm. These are not things that are coming up on the campaign trail yet, but they're going to, whether my book reaches anyone or not, because it's the reality. About 6,500 people die in America every day, and about 1,200 of them do it well. And the others, there's lots of pain, and there's lots of useless intervention, and there's lots of bankruptcy. And Americans are just not going to sit still as those numbers grow and grow and grow with our aging society.
How do we define, Stephen, dying? When do we, in a medical sense, what's the definition of that?
Oh boy, okay. Let me say this as a non-physician, but as a student of this, you know, I've looked at it pretty hard. There are about 35,000 people. That's one study that's pretty definitive. It says there are about 35,000 people right now in America living in a persistent vegetative state. They are not going to recover. Okay? Now, we had a great debate about a year and a half ago in this country about whether that's life or death and what ought to be done for those people. Right? We also know there are somewhere around 1,500 to 2,000 people in our country right now who are no longer alive, but they are dead. But their body, their organism is being maintained by machinery so that their organs can be harvested for transplant. A terrifically generous thing for a family to do when a loved one has died. And, you know, just literally creating life out of death. Beautiful thing. But the point is that person is already dead, and yet the pumps are keeping the lungs going and the blood circulating and so on. So that means that really, there is the line, if anyone can draw it medically, it's a very, very difficult thing to draw. So what I really think is it's up to each individual to decide how much is enough. When do we say, that's it, I'm gone? And you know, there are instruments, there are legal documents that people can draw up that will draw that line. I've said, for example, if I am in that kind of a state, I want to be kept alive by whatever means necessary for 48 hours. So my kids can say goodbye to me, and my siblings, because I'm a very close family, very blessed, that they can come say goodbye to me. And after 48 hours, I want everything turned off, and I want to be wheeled into the sun. Because I know that day is going to come for me. I don't want it, and I sure hope it's a lot of years from now, because I love being alive. But it's going to come. So why rip me apart to gain one more day of questionable quality? That's how I've decided what enough is. You might have a different definition, and every person who's listening to this program might have a different definition, but it's something to think about because, in fact, those questions are going to come up, and you may want to be maintained in a persistent vegetative state for decades, or you may say, when I'm gone, let me be gone. Don't be jolting my heart when it's stopped. Let me be gone. That's something that people are going to have to reckon with, and if they don't think of it ahead of time, then they're going to have a crisis in the intensive care unit, and they're going to have to make the decision on the fly then. And what I found with the people I've spoken to is that's kind of the worst way to make it, in a crisis.
And you had two different life experiences with both your mom and your dad.
I did, and that was a big part of my education in this. I didn't realize that life was preparing me to write this book, but my dad was terminally ill and in a coma, and my family spared no expense. He was 65 years old, and he was very out of shape and overweight and a very heavy smoker. And so he was in a coma. He was not going to recover. And we spared no medical extravagance because we got confused. We thought that medical care was the same thing as love. They're not the same thing. And then in the end, I think we tortured this guy.
Mm.
And while a bunch of it was covered by health insurance, not all was, but we spent about $250,000 on him the last month of his life. And there was never a chance for him to wake up. My mom died at home in her bed with her loved ones around 4 years later. We learned something about how to give somebody a dignified final passage with lots of tender love and care. And what we learned, America needs to learn.
We're taking a break. I am talking to the author of Last Rites, that's R-I-G-H-T-S, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System, Stephen P. Kernan. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
ConnectCare, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU 920 a.m.
It's time for another WGNU Global News Update. I'm Peyton Colston. Dateline Rome, an Italian court has ruled against a paralyzed, terminally ill man wishing to be taken off life support. 60-year-old Pier Giorgio Welby suffers from advanced muscular dystrophy and is confined to bed. He speaks via a computer that interprets his eye movements. Welby has written to Italy's president asking to be taken off the respirator that keeps Welby alive so he can, quote, find peace for my tortured and shattered body, end quote. A Rome court, however, has ruled against the request, saying Welby has a right to have the respirator removed, but that right is not, quote, concretely safeguarded by Italian law. Welby's lawyers argue that doctors, by their own code of ethics, have no right to keep him alive against his wishes. They base their appeal on an article of Italy's constitution that says no one can be forced to accept a specific medical treatment. But Welby's doctor says if he removes the respirator, he would then be obligated to resuscitate Welby. I'm Peyton Colston, and that's a WGNU Global News Update.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to my conversation with Stephen Kernan. He is a journalist and author of Last Rites, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System. And Stephen, I've had a couple of advertisers on the show that advertise hospice care. And I sat down and talked with them during the run of the advertising and trying to get people to participate in this hospice care. And we both concluded that people really have a misconception about what hospice care is. Did you find that to be so?
I did. I think an awful lot of people consider hospice care giving up, mm-hmm. saying the end is near, and that it's really kind of a bad news scenario when a physician says you ought to go to hospice. And that's really a shame because in many ways hospice is a godsend. It's really for people who get into it early enough, it is a way to really have a dignified and beautiful end to their life. Hospice is an idea that came up shortly after World War II in Great Britain. And there was a nurse, physician, researcher, and maybe saint who founded this. And what it is they put the patient at the center of care. And that sounds like not that unusual, but in fact...
It is.
It is, right. Today, the institution's at the center of care. Mm-hmm. You go to the hospital. The healthcare doesn't come to you.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is they put the patient at the center of care, and they say, what can we do to make your life the highest quality it possibly can be? Some of that is going to be medical. But as we were talking before, there are lots of dimensions to the end of a person's life that are not medical. They're social, they're financial, they're familial, and they're spiritual. And hospice tries to meet all of those needs. Of course, one of the important components is they do their best to make people comfortable, to make sure they can get a good deep breath, to manage their pain, and so on. But then it's really about what last wishes do you have. Most of the time with hospice, the care is provided at home. And volunteers come, and they help with cleaning the patient, and they help with the patient's medication, and it might be that there's clergy that help. Interestingly, hospice also considers the family part of the sort of unit under treatment. Mm-hmm. Family members are considered patients too, so their needs are taken into account along the way, and even afterward with bereavement support. You know, we were talking before about the amount of pain that people are in. About half of the people who die in hospitals today have undertreated pain at the end of their lives. And research says that in hospice, it's about 2%. Mm-hmm. And so the point being, almost everyone has a lot more physical comfort, and that makes possible all kinds of emotional comfort, too.
And hospice is different than a nursing home or another inpatient facility. It's different.
It is. That's right. Well, you know, beginning with where the care is provided.
There you go.
Sometimes hospice care is given in nursing homes, but typically it's given to people in their own home. In the case of my mom, she was in her apartment, and you know, she wasn't hospitalized overnight at any time in 13 months of dying of breast cancer. And so you know, that's a piece of it. It's also about sort of what are the goals. You know, in a hospital, the goal is cure. And when a cure is possible, you want all that horsepower, all the smarts, all the technology. But when somebody is beyond cure, then it's really about how can you make their life as good as possible. And that's what hospice is expert in.
How do we compare with other countries in terms of this, of hospice, the concept of hospice care, and also our way of dying?
Well, I want to be careful not to bash America, because I'm a good patriotic guy. But the fact is that other countries are ahead of us. Hospice was invented elsewhere, and there are much higher portions of people who use hospice care at the end of their life in Great Britain. In Canada and many European nations, you can't get out of medical school without doing rotations in hospice.
That's not
true in the United States. There's a newer notion called palliative care, which is about giving, sort of applying the hospice principles within the walls of an existing hospital. And again, you can't get out of medical school in a lot of other countries without you know, tens or even hundreds of hours of training in palliative care. In the United States, palliative care only was a recognized specialty 2 months ago. So we're behind on that some. Again, the positive side is that our can-do mentality has meant a lot of innovation. And so I have a feeling when our medical culture awakens to how dying has changed, that we'll catch up. But right now, we're definitely behind the curve.
Well, let me ask this question. Is there a lot of money to be made in hospice care?
No. That's part of the problem. You know, let me give some numbers again. I think it kind of tells the story. In the last 25 years, we've seen the number of hospitals in America decline by about 10%. About a tenth of the hospitals have gone out of business. Meanwhile, intensive care unit beds have grown by about 15%. There are now 66,000 intensive care unit beds. And those beds generate, you know, anywhere from $2,000 to $20,000 a day for the hospitals of America. Hospice care, by contrast, you know, what's involved? A nurse that visits at home and the emotional and spiritual supports and some pain medicines, typically.
No machines, no big state-of-the-art testing devices, none of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there was a great study, exactly. There was a great study done in the, I can't remember if it was Virginia or West Virginia. I think it was Virginia. At any rate, they took two units, basically two sides of a hallway, and one side of in a hospital, and one side got the usual care. Let's do all the tests. Let's do all the everything. And the other side, they said, let's just give people care that's really focused on their comfort. These are all people beyond cure in the last week of their life. And what they found is that the qualitative experience was better for the people who had the comfort approach, and the care cost half as much. Well, you know, they never named a hospital wing after somebody who cut costs in half. So there's a lot of investment in the approach that we have now, and I think that's part of some of the reluctance you'll see. It's also not, you know, if you're a physician who decides that you're going to practice end-of-life care, palliative and hospice medicine, that is not sexy. That is, you're not going to get grant money like a brain surgeon is. You're not going to get prestige like a heart surgeon.
And you're not going to have three Mercedes in a four-car garage.
That's right. So it's going to take a different kind of practitioner. It's going to have to take people with a different value system. And I think it's going to be people who've lost their parents. And so they know what the need is and what the opportunity is.
One quick call here. Andre, quick call, please.
Hey, how you all doing? First of all, this is definitely a subject that's close to me. I have been an undertaker all my adult life. Matter of fact, yesterday was my Silver Jubilee. I've seen this from more than one side, not only in funeral service, but I spent almost 10 years in the morgue at General Hospital of San Francisco. And there is such a denial going on, as I guess is saying, that, for example, they didn't even want to call it the morgue. It was called Ward X. Doctors see death as an enemy, and they have an antagonistic view toward it. So, and also, as he was saying, two things that doctors routinely are not taught about are death and nutrition. So they don't teach in medical schools how people can live healthily in terms of what they eat, consume. They don't teach how people can die in a healthy way either.
That's an awesome point. And let me give the last few minutes to my guest, Andre. Okay. Thank you so much. Great point, huh?
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it, that the things that, here's the way I put it to people, because, you know, I interviewed hundreds of doctors and read the research of hundreds more on this. I really found about three that were arrogant, self-important jerks. Really three. I could tell you their names. but compared with that, the point is that all of the others, hundreds, they were really bright. They were incredibly well-trained. They had way more education than me. They're all smarter than me. And they all really meant well. But they were educated and lived and worked in a system where they were expert but not great listeners.
Mm.
And so, you know, what that you were talking about terms of endearment, that somebody needs to stand in the hallway and shout, get some pain medicine here.
That's right.
Says, we're just trying to teach these folks how to listen. Some of the most moving moments for me in my research were when I interviewed doctors who had become patients. And suddenly their eyes were open and they said, wow, this is what I've been practicing in all these years. I had no idea. And it's very humbling for them. And very often they change direction in their careers. And like with us, I think that's how it begins to grow, as people begin to have insight. And, how we live well for as long as we possibly can, it's got to be about listening. One woman who runs a hospice facility described to me like this: if you love Beethoven, the last thing you want to listen to around the clock the last week of your life is Bruce Springsteen.
Absolutely.
But if you love Bruce Springsteen, the last thing you want to listen to is Beethoven. And so she says that to people and says, so what kind of music do you want to listen to at the end of your life? And people say, oh, I get to choose?
Mm.
And it's the beginning of an insight about how slow dying actually presents people with terrific opportunities. No, I talked to a guy about 2 weeks ago who's probably not going to make it till Christmas. I guess it was more like a month ago. But he knew he was going to make it to Thanksgiving, and his grandchildren were visiting. And at the end of our conversation, he said he knew that was going to be the last time he'd see him. And he said, just think how good those hugs are going to feel.
Stephen Kernan, author of Last Rites, Rescuing the End of Life from the Medical System, thank you so much.
Entirely my pleasure, and peace to you.
Happy holidays as well.
Thank you.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown. I will be back in the next hour with a conversation with Liam Sheff. What is up with this idea that malaria is now a conduit of AIDS, but only in Africa? We're going to have that conversation this morning, and I think I can pretty well predict that coming from Liam, the answer is no, it's not. They're lying to you. We'll be back with Mondays at 9. You don't want to miss that. Stay with me.
Santa, honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you.
The issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Searchers will comb Mount Hood, Oregon again today. They're looking for two climbers. Captain Mike Berbish with the state's National Guard says the teams won't give up.
The searchers are putting their heart and soul into this. We still keep that common focus that we all have. There is a common focus. We continue to search. We continue to look. We remain optimistic. We remain hopeful.
They didn't get to the third climber in time, though. Sources tell ABC News the body found in a snow cave yesterday was missing climber Kelly James. The new defense secretary is on the job. Robert Gates was sworn in this morning and now has to deal with the war in Iraq, which he says the U.S. is not winning, the war in Afghanistan, and more.
He'll inherit problems in Korea, not only nuclear proliferation, but tension with South Korea over the relocation of U.S. forces. There's the problem of the Taiwan Straits, which is not urgent at this moment, but which Secretary Rumsfeld did not really resolve in any way.
ABC News military consultant Tony Cordesman. More than 5 years after 9/11 and over a year since Hurricane Katrina, are we any better prepared to handle an attack or a natural disaster? A new study says not really.
You'd think after Hurricane Katrina, we learned some lessons.
The results are not acceptable.
No direction, no information, we have nothing.
We need to be taken out of here.
But nearly half of us, according to a new survey, haven't even thought about what we would do with a natural disaster or terrorist attack. The Nonprofit Council for Excellence in Government says only 8% of people surveyed say they have taken steps to prepare for a big emergency, and says public awareness of local disaster plans is still surprisingly low. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
The shuttle Discovery astronauts got the Beach Boys for a wake-up call today. They'll go on a forced spacewalk. They're trying to get a solar panel unjammed. ABC News Money Scope, the Dow is up 35 points in early going. This is ABC News.
I know not how to express my devotion to so fair a form. I want a brighter word than bright, a fairer word than fair. I almost wish we were butterflies and lived but 3 summer days. 3 such days with you I could fill with more delight than 50 common years could ever contain. This is how the poet John Keats said, "I love you." This Christmas, say something just as beautiful without saying a word. A diamond is forever.
I'm cruising in my ride, 16 switches. Gotta get my floss on, watch out.
Life may never be clean, but with Hoover, your floors can be. Hoover Floormate cleans all your hard floors. Hoover Wind Tunnel 2 Upright vacuums your carpets. Buy them together and get up to a $100 mail-in rebate. So use Hoover and keep it clean. Offer varies. See Hoover.com and participating dealers for details. Expires 1707.
It worked for trains. How about coal-powered planes? ABC's Bob Schmidt says some believe it's an interesting possibility.
Coal fueled the railroads of the 19th and early 20th centuries. Now there's new interest in coal reduced to its liquid form as a 21st century alternative. The Air Force recently flew a B-52 bomber using a mixture of half jet fuel and half CTL, short for coal-to-liquid fuel. The technology to make CTL dates back to the 1920s. U.S. coal companies are working on ways to produce tens of thousands of barrels of it as a fuel that would not only be an alternative to oil, but also a lot cheaper than imported crude. Bob Schmidt, ABC News.
Are you thinking about skipping the gym? Don't, especially this time of year. The doctors at RealAge.com say a 45-minute workout 5 times a week can significantly lower your risk of catching a cold, and they say the longer that you make it a habit, the better the benefits. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
This report of WGNU News is brought to you by Advil. I'm Peyton Colston. In Jefferson City, the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services is denying licenses to the Anderson Guest House and 3 other seniors' facilities. Department Director Jane Drummond says an investigation showed that Robert DuPont was illegally involved in the operation of the 4 facilities, including the group home where 10 people died in a fire last month. DuPont is banned from doing business with Medicaid because of a past health care fraud conviction. The Anderson Guest House, Joplin Guest House, and Guest House 3, and Carl Junction Guest House must be closed and their residents relocated by January 5th. Also in Jefferson City, Governor Matt Blunt's requesting a federal disaster declaration for the city of St. Louis, St. Louis County, and 10 other counties. Blunt says federal help is needed to continue the recovery from the deadly winter storms and power outages earlier this month. The statewide death toll from the storms stands at 11. Jefferson County Sheriff Glenn Boyer is warning area residents to be extra vigilant about mail theft during the holiday season. Boyer says not to make your gifts an easy target. He says one way you can protect yourself is to not allow package deliveries to be left at your door. Picking packages up or arranging for a delivery time when someone will be home can ensure that packages will not be stolen. And finally, time is running out to sign up for Medicare Part D without penalties in 2007. Seniors and their caregivers have until December 31st to decide to enroll in a plan or switch to a new one. Those eligible for Part D who sign up after that date will be penalized 1% of their premium total each month. More than 32 million people were enrolled in Part D as of June 2006 and are saving an average of $1,200 a year, according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. For information on Medicare Part D, call 1-800-MEDICARE or AARP's customer service line. That's 866-255-4835. That's WGNU News brought to you by Advil. Advil PM tonight. Spend less time lying awake with annoying aches and pains and more time asleep when you switch from Tylenol PM to new Advil PM. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Open from American Express. All your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect a little bit of a delay as you're rolling into the downtown area, both on the Poplar Street Bridge as well as the King Bridge approaches. Other than that, you have a number of ongoing construction projects that are current right now, so just use caution and slow down through those work zones. That's a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Open from American Express. Open, how American Express serves small businesses. To learn more, visit open.com or call 1-800-NOW-OPEN. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Cloudy, cooler, chance of rain this morning. Otherwise, the temps will be in the mid-40s for this evening. Mostly cloudy, colder, with a low in the mid-20s. Tuesday, partly cloudy, high in the upper 40s. And Wednesday, they're expecting mostly cloudy skies, with a high near 50. Currently, we have 42 degrees under clouds. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Boom, 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 boom.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa Santa Cutie and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa Cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry. Tonight.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to, I believe this will be the last Mondays of at 9 of the year 2006. My guest this hour is Liam Sheff. He's an independent journalist from San Francisco, and we're talking about this extraordinary story of AIDS and malaria. Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Very good. Liam, I'm looking at this email that I received last Friday, actually. Save the Children, a participant in a December 14th White House summit on malaria, is calling attention to the nearly 1 million preventable young deaths from malaria by asking the global community at all levels of society, governments, corporations, individuals to join together to provide a comprehensive approach to treating malaria. Save the Children is working to prevent and treat malaria in children and pregnant women in 10 countries in Africa and Asia, introducing more effective non-resistant drug therapies, trained healthcare workers, and management and distribution systems for their drug distribution. And coincidentally, a few days before this story broke, or this press release was released, was the story of the connection of AIDS and malaria. Have you read the, have you looked at that story of malaria and AIDS?
Yeah, I did. I sent an email out when I read the title. I think the title was almost something to the extent that malaria causes AIDS or AIDS causes malaria or one or the other. They seem to be, a horse and rider at some, horse and buggy at some point.
Well, talk to us about the argument that they are making and how insane this argument is.
Oh, sure. The argument they're making is, well, you know, goes to the idea that there are two organizations here, and they're fighting to both make money in Africa. The first is the idea that there's malaria in Africa. Well, that's true. There's malaria in Africa. There's malaria in the Philippines. There's malaria in Vietnam. There's malaria everywhere that there are water systems that aren't clean and aren't providing clean water to the population. This is as old as time. There was malaria in the United States through the 20th century where swamps weren't drained, and when it got hot, even in Toronto, way up in Canada, you can have malaria. Malaria is carried by mosquitoes. It forms in stagnant water. It's a terrible, terrible illness because you can keep getting it. You can remain chronically infected. It will wear you away. You'll have chronic illness, fatigue, diarrhea, all the rest of the stuff that goes along with it. AIDS, on the other hand, is a brand name for anything that happens in Africa, but we associate it with sex, I think falsely, and the medical studies bear that out, that there's almost no real association with sex. So the way that this works is you have a real disease, but it's not an attractive disease. It's not a sexy disease. You can't invest in it. You tell people that, oh, let's treat malaria. Well, okay, who cares? You tell people, let's treat AIDS. AIDS, oh, the sex disease. Oh, let's sell condoms. Let's monitor sexual reproduction. Let's get involved in making sure there aren't too many people over there. Suddenly you can find an investor or two.
So have you just piggyback on the back of AIDS and money falls from trees?
Money falls from trees, but the thing...
I need you to hold that thought because we're taking a break right now.
Yep.
I'm talking to Liam Sheff, independent journalist, joining us from San Francisco area. This is Mondays at 9. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Make your holiday exciting by celebrating Christmas New Orleans style.
Come for the food.
Come for the art.
Come for the history.
Come for the sweet sounds of jazz.
Visit NewOrleansOnline.com to plan a December getaway filled with Réveillon feasts, free concerts, French Quarter shopping, and all the excitement of Harrah's Casino. And make it last with discounted hotel rates, courtesy of Papa Noel himself. Visit NewOrleansOnline.com today to get your free guide with more than $2,400 in coupons and jazz up your December New Orleans style.
Come for the fun.
Come feel good.
Come for the beauty. Come for the
spirit, heart, and soul.
Come for it all.
Come fall in love with New Orleans all over again.
Discover Christmas New Orleans style at NewOrleansOnline.com.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal, work, or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Real life on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
You know, there's Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, and Vixen. How many children in Donner and Blitzen? But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all?
Hey, Rudolph. Whoa, Rudolph. Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown, and this is Mondays at 9, 1-877-920-WGNU.
At 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Liam Sheff is my guest. He's an independent journalist. He's joining us from the San Francisco area. We're talking about the news reports of AIDS being connected to malaria in Africa. And Liam, welcome back.
Hi, Liz.
When we talk about this whole concept of AIDS and a connection to malaria, my understanding of it is, from the article, is that somehow malaria is supposed to enhance the almost like a delivery system for the AIDS virus.
Here's what they say. They say you have a disease. You have a disease called malaria. It's caused by a parasite. When you give people who have malaria a test, and they call these HIV tests, but they're nonspecific, they come up higher. They're not tests for any particular particle. So you give people who have malaria a nonspecific test that comes up for just about anything, any disease, any infection, non-infectious conditions like pregnancy, you then have a higher number on that test. The tests being used here are called viral load tests, or PCR tests. And you know that they come up positive for anything because it says so in the medical literature. It says they have no standard. It says they shouldn't be used for diagnosis. The funny thing is, so they're saying that when you give, you in a sense take a population that you know is sick with something. Now, it's not a sexy disease. It's not something that you can sell a lot of concern for in America. You then give them a test that isn't approved for diagnosing, and by the way, these viral load tests aren't approved for diagnosing any particular infection. They're used to monitor drug regimen. You then give them a test that are used to monitor drug regimen, not approved for diagnosing any infection, and you find a bigger number. Here's the problem. Two problems. One, these tests give big numbers when people are infected with worms. There's a study from, I think, 96 or so, that finds that the numbers go up. In 2002, an African study showed that viral load was high in patients who had intestinal worms but went down when they were treated for the problem. The title of the article was, "Treatment of Intestinal Worms is Associated with Decreased HIV Viral Load." So if you just treated the malaria, you can assume that this magical number would go down, but that's too complicated WHO.
Well, is it too complicated, or is there another plan in place?
Yeah, there's another plan in place, and I want to talk about that. I just sent you an email on the second, and I'll...
And I'm looking at it. I have it in front of me.
The second problem with the idea of viral load is it's just been stated in the Journal of the American Medical Association that viral load is now on the way out. This magical thing that they brought in about 10 years ago to figure out how they could diagnose something that they couldn't essentially find in the blood is now on the way out, and they're saying that it's no longer a good predictor of patient health. In fact, what they say is that the viral load number correlates less than 10% with T-cell loss, and this is another measurement that is brought in to validate this AIDS model. You do two things. You give tests but don't test for anything specific, and you start looking at T cells. You only do this when you want to bring the name AIDS into it. If you did it with everybody, you'd find just about the same thing all across the board. These are just the sort of things that you add on to it so you can claim that you're looking at AIDS. Anyway, they no longer say that apparently HIV no longer causes AIDS except maybe a little bit less than 10%. That's what they're saying. HIV measurement is questioned in the United Press International, they say. Researchers say that the fact that HIV RNA level in untreated HIV patients has little value in predicting the rate of T-cell count decrease.
But, Liam, isn't this viral load the gold standard in this country of assessing whether or not you have AIDS? It's the gold standard of measurement, isn't it?
There is no
From their perspective,
there are two things. One, there is no gold standard. So that is, there's no particular particle that they use to say yes, you're infected with anything, and they say that over and over again in the medical literature. You can read all this, and I'm going to quote a lot from the articles "Knowing is Beautiful" and "Sex Crimes," which are on my website, liamsheff.com. And you can find all of this in their literature. There's no gold standard. But you're right, they decided that they needed something that they could say, no, we'll use this. This will be our standard. The standard was to validate everything backwards with this T cell count. This viral load counting. Now they're saying, U.S. research indicates that the HIV viral load level in untreated HIV patients has little value in predicting the rate of T cell count disease. In fact, they say more than 90% of T cell decline is not reflected of the amount of what they're calling virus in the blood. In other words, HIV doesn't cause AIDS except maybe a little less than 10%. That's the new medical literature. Yesterday's medical literature was different. Tomorrow's, I assume, will be different, too.
But before we get to that, Liam, this is a huge story, isn't it?
This is the major story of, I would say, probably the century, that there's an idea in the world that there's a sex plague going around, and the way you validate it is with bunk science, with pseudoscience. You, in essence...
wait a minute, and let's be clear for our listeners here. The way that we have been told that you validate this sex disease that's going on out here is by a viral load test. And this report that is coming out now, U.S. research, preliminary research, is saying that the viral load has little value.
That's correct. 10 years ago, they knew that the test was not approved for diagnosing any particular infection. They knew that there was no standard, and if you read the medical literature, they'll just say so out loud, and they'll say they can't figure out who's positive and who's negative, truly because it's difficult to interpret because there's just no standard as to what it means. And I'll just read one of these. The diagnosis of HIV infection, and this is about PCR viral load test, the diagnosis of HIV infection in infants is particularly difficult because there is no reference or gold standard test that determines unequivocally the true infection status of the patient. This is the Journal of the American Medical Association in May 1996. That goes, that stuff goes on and on and on and on and on. The maker of the thing says the Amplicor HIV monitor test is not intended to be used as a screening test for HIV or as a diagnostic test to confirm the presence of HIV infection. That's 10 years old. That's from the manufacturer of the product. We've been using something that doesn't work. Before that, they used antibody tests. They still use antibody tests. Those don't work. It doesn't need to. All you need to do is to create an illusion. The illusion is masterful. It's really just the greatest show on earth. All you have to do is say that essentially what happened in the gay community, in a very particular subset of the gay community in the early 80s, which was essentially a drug and disease and a disease of social and cultural ghettoization in America, is now the same sex disease that every heterosexual black person has. So let's circumcise all of them. Let's make sure they're all wearing condoms. Let's make sure that when they're pregnant, they take drugs that are very poisonous. Let's get into countries where we don't have any particular authority or we have no other way of making money. I mean, AIDS is a particularly good way to get something out of nothing. If you look at countries in Africa which have been perennial, Ethiopia, the Sudan, all of these places of massive famine and conflict, how do you get anything out of it? You start using the bodies.
We're going to take a break. This is Mondays at 9. I'm talking to Liam Sheff, independent journalist, joining us from San Francisco. We're talking about AIDS. We will be back. Stay with us.
Goldie's Music has assembled over 50 of the greatest rock and roll songs ever recorded in one 3-CD set called Rock and Roll Greats. You'll get Bill Haley and the Comets, Jerry Lee Lewis, the Everly Brothers, Gene Vincent, Brenda Lee, Fats Domino, Danny and the Juniors.
Great balls of fire!
Yes, over 50 of the best rock and roll songs in one package, a must for any collection. Nothing but the hits from Carl Perkins, Bobby Day, Lloyd Price, The Platters, Little Richard, The Diamonds, The Beach Boys, and many more. 50 Rock and Roll Greats.
Hey, little darling.
Let's go surfing now. Everybody's learning now. Come on a safari.
Us, the best of the girl groups.
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
rock and roll greats. Makes a great gift. Call 1-800-577-3995. That's 1-800-577-3995. 1-800-577-3995.
This is Alan Brainerd. Join me Wednesdays at noon for Design 411 on AM 920 WGNU. No matter where you live, no matter what your lifestyle, you'll find out how to turn your ordinary home into an extraordinary home. My guests and I will give you the 411 on everything from classic design to the newest decorating trends. Join me, Alan Brainerd, for Design 411 every Wednesday at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your home.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
On an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots, dear eyes.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to Mondays at 9. My name is Liz Brown. My guest this hour is Liam Sheff, independent journalist, joining us from the San Francisco area. And we are talking about AIDS and malaria and AIDS and circumcision and the real reasons behind these connections. Liam, I talked to you off the air. I sent you an article about a story that came out of Africa. Researchers there are saying that there is a connection between the men who are circumcised and AIDS, that men who are circumcised don't get AIDS at the same rate as men who are not. And so there's this push in Africa now to circumcise grown men.
Yeah, in fact, what they say, I think it's that they don't get AIDS, but that they're less, they're not as HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's an important distinction. AIDS is a clinical diagnosis of just about any illness that anybody can have, and as long as they fit into a particular group, you can call it AIDS. HIV is a different question. It's a question then of testing. And it's perfectly logical that if you circumcise somebody and you're testing them for one thing or another, and you give them a non-specific test, it's in essence a test for any fungal or bacterial infection. These HIV antibody tests that they'll be giving these people, which are different than the viral load tests. They're equally non-standardized and non-specific, but they work on a different principle. They measure just proteins in the blood. So these tests are well known to come up for any yeast infection, any bacterial infection. And as they have no standard and they have no reference standard, that's all it means. So if you take people who are uncircumcised and they have a few more fungal or bacterial infections, or you're testing their partners, or you're taking a swab from their partner, you'll have a higher level of antibody production. Who knows how they're doing it? It doesn't really add up to anything, but it's another way to connect this ancient fascination. And you know, it's embarrassing. I have to say it's embarrassing to feel that the primary interest of, you know, white men in lab coats is to this day, doing something, obsessing over black man's penises. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
There has been a thousand-year history of an obsession with black men's things.
Yep.
On every level of however you describe, however you define things.
Yeah, male power, male mm-hmm. sexuality, on and on and on. But this is really it put into some sort of weird psychosexual nexus. So what they're doing is they're taking non-specific, you know, non-validated tests, and they're giving them to people, and they're saying, now we want to circumcise you. And the question is, I guess that's, this is such great research, I guess this is why all non-Jews have AIDS.
Mm.
You know, anybody who's non-circumcised then should just have HIV or AIDS. Of course, it's a lie. I mean, it's science fiction.
And part of my suspicious mind, born out of being born here and existing here for a couple of decades or so, is I wonder also if there's some value in what they are taking off as a result of circumcising grown men. That there is some other deeper level of experimentation that is going on.
Well, they're giving these people. But the big thing that's going on, I mean, is that we're actively neurotic about the number of Africans in the world. We've seen now for decades and centuries that there's a lot of strife and famine in Africa. We, that is, the West, or those people with guns and power, have helped to create a lot of it. We haven't created all of it. But there is a lot of it. It's historical. It stems from the time of the 1400s when slavery was given a big okay to the early 20th century, World War I, where Africa was used essentially as a demolition ground for European powers, and Africa was left razed, burnt to the ground in many senses after that, and never really recovered in areas. We have constantly seen that there's a lot of hunger and strife and starvation. And in 1984 or 5, I guess, the idea was that this could be connected to apparently a sex problem that was occurring in the gay community, which was really a drug and sort of toxicological problem. And it's now been wrapped up fully and completely, and everybody believes that somehow Africans have a lot of sex disease. So it gives us an ability to do something. It gives us finally an ability to validate our concern that there are too many Africans in the world and that we have to control populations. And, you know, maybe we do have to control populations in the world. I'd prefer that people were honest about it. You know, they just said this.
Or allow other people to be participatory in the decision-making of that.
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly... The funny thing happens, you know, Europe, America, we all have small to negative population growth, and this is just a phenomenon that you see in the world. As soon as a country becomes wealthy enough, you know, people grow more conservative. When you don't have anything, children, I mean, just having children becomes a value because children can work or they can get married. When you have a country like we do, or like any of the Western European countries where we have a lot of space, but they have limited space and limited resources, you become very conservative. Well, you don't want to have too many children. Population growth goes into decline, and everybody has more, and everybody gets fatter. We're not really interested in seeing that happen for Africa. It's a different continent. It's a different countries, and you know, a lot of these countries are still really existing with many subdivided tribal groups. You can't just sell them on the idea of sort of Western, I won't use the word democracy, but sort of Western capitalism as a model to adopt. So we need ways to get in there. And AIDS is it's just the perfect lever. It opens it right up.
And isn't there also that piece of the AIDS industry that allows people to use it to say things about themselves that are not so? Bill Clinton hopping on the bandwagon of saving young Africans from AIDS is redemptive. I mean, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, he's Elvis in the White House. Everybody, the joke was that he was the first black president.
That's an insult to my father and my brothers who are of African descent. I know what black men look like, and he's not.
Well, but that was the joke. And the joke was because, you know, he was so convivial and so concerned, you know, with the black community in America. He's just another guy sort of pushing this internationalist agenda. Now, look, you want to take malaria drugs to Africa? You know, go with God. Be my guest. You want to tell everybody that, you know, we have to examine their private parts and they can't have kids anymore? I think that you've really crossed a align, and this is the sort of Clintonista project in the world. It's going on in any country that we sort of need to get in. China's now being targeted, and Bill Clinton's bringing the show to China. 60 Minutes covered him last year going to China, and you know, they're supervising the building of these rapid testing production centers. Well, these rapid tests are about as good as a mood ring to figure out if you're sick. They don't mean anything. So they're giving them to these poor, rural, sort of indigenous farmers who've been pushed off their land, who are now being asked by the Chinese government to work nonstop so that China can beat the United States in production of plastic things. And that's sort of where they're heading. So we have now an AIDS thing in China, which is another bit of science fiction. What does Clinton get out of Africa? It's what everybody gets out of Africa. You get to look good, just like you said. You get to say things about yourself that aren't true, just like you said. And you feed into this ancient, you know, concern. I don't know how else to say it, except there are people who think there are too many black people in the world. And this is just a very easy way to monitor those populations.
What impact do you think that this story that you sent to me this morning about the viral load, having little to no value, what impact will that have?
I don't know. You know, I've never seen a better bunch of jugglers than this AIDS infrastructure. They're not, you know, if they were sailing on a ship, the ship would be nothing but, you know, scraps of wood. There's so many holes in it. There's nothing about it that makes any logical sense to anybody who reviews it with an open mind or critical mind. But it stays afloat, you know, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. You can just keep adding to it. I mean, as soon as you say the name AIDS, there's something about it. There's something about the world that we live in now, the world that's sort of dissociated from any particular religion, the world that's all too interconnected, that it's like people need a way to address all of those things that we used to sort of address individually or in groups or even in our little tribes, about fears about sex and other people and xenophobia. And AIDS is perfect. As soon as you feel that somebody isn't quite your style or clean enough, you worry that they now have AIDS. You worry that sex with them will suddenly kill you. This is as old as any you know, tribal element.
Well, talk to us about the story about Jack Nicholson and what was it?
Rolling Stones.
Rolling Stones. Talk to us about that story.
It's hilarious. I mean, Jack Nicholson. And by the way, if anybody should have a sex disease, Bill Clinton should be right at the top of the list.
Fair enough.
But he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe his marriage, I consider diseased. But anyway, Nicholson comes into Rolling Stone, and this is a guy who's seen more attractive women in his life than, I don't know, than any...
Beyond explanation. I mean, yeah, okay.
Than a Beverly Hills gynecologist. There it is. So he... comes into Rolling Stone, and they interview him, and he says, "No, the guy asked him about his sex life, and he says, I don't wear condoms." And the guy, you know, the nervous reporter says, "Well, what do you mean?"
Wait a minute, and this is Rolling Stone. We're not talking about any other type of the Christian Science Monitor. We're talking about Rolling Stones became nervous.
Oh yeah. You know, it's just, you're just not allowed to say that. Everybody knows it's true. I mean, the condom rule is a rule of two. It's either the second time, you know, the second minute, or, I don't know. You know, as soon as you trust the person is the joke in college. Oh, I really trust you now. So you don't have to use a condom anymore. I mean, nobody uses these things consistently or even very much except to make themselves feel better about something. I'm not arguing against condoms, by the way. I don't use them if you don't want to get certain STDs and if you don't want to get pregnant, fine. But Nicholson says, "I don't use condoms." And the Rolling Stone reporter says, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "Well, I went to a doctor and he said I really didn't have to worry about it."
And hold to that thought, because we're going to finish that when we come back. I'm talking to Liam Schaff, independent journalist, joining us from San Francisco. This is Mondays at 9. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me.
The 25th anniversary tour of Cats is coming to your hometown.
If I'm a pheasant, I'd rather have grass.
It's the original magical musical.
Oh, well, I never was there ever. memory to last 9 lifetimes. Don't miss your chance to introduce your family to the wonders of live theater with the magic, the mystery, the memory of the Cats 25th Anniversary Tour. See it live on stage, then take the memory home forever with the Universal Studios home video. Coming to the Fox Theater December 27th through 31st. Tickets on sale now at MetroTix. Presented by the U.S. Bank Broadway Series. It's your last chance to see the 25th Anniversary Tour of Cats.
Here's a WGNU Global News update. I'm Peyton Colston. Dateline London. Former Russian spy Alexander Litvinenko was murdered because of an 8-page document he had compiled on a powerful Russian figure for a British company. That, according to reported Litvinenko associate Yuri Shvets, speaking to the BBC, who says Litvinenko had been employed by Western companies to provide information on potential Russian clients before they committed to investment deals in Russia. The BBC says it has obtained portions of the document, and it contains, quote, damaging personal details about a very highly placed member of Putin's administration. Shvets alleges Litvinenko gave the incriminating document to Andrei Lugovoy, who then leaked the information to the Russian figure. Lugovoy met Litvinenko at a London hotel the day he became ill from radioactive poisoning. Shvets says Litvinenko admitted during their meeting Lugovoy offered him tea that wasn't made in front of him. Lugovoy denies having anything to do with Litvinenko's death. On his deathbed, Litvinenko accused Russian President Vladimir Putin of ordering his killing. I'm Peyton Colston, and that's a WGNU Global News Update.
Hello, I'm John Womack. I have a new show on WGNU called On the Table. Some of the things we'll talk about will be restaurants, food and wine trends, recipes, but really, we're just trying to help you experience great food and wine, whether you're at home or out on the town. So if you love great food and wine, you'll love On the Table. Be listening every Tuesday at noon here on WGNU.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Little girls, little boys, dream of worlds, lots of toys, this time of the year, when Christmas is near. This
is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Mondays at 9. My guest this hour is Liam Sheft, independent journalist, joining us from San Francisco. We're talking about AIDS. And Liam, you were telling the story of the Rolling Stone article written about Jack Nicholson.
Right. This is 2 months ago. Nicholson is interviewed for the big, celebrity star interview, and they're talking about sex, of course, because that's Jack's stock and trade besides acting. And the reporter writes, when the AIDS crisis started, Nicholson tried wearing condoms, but they prevented him from feeling the, quote, full catastrophe of the sex act. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. So he went to a doctor who told him not to worry about getting AIDS, so he no longer wears condoms. Now, the reporter fails to add and is just fantastic, has no problems, and is just continuing to be Jack Nicholson. So Nicholson says, I went to my doctor and got a very specific scientific analysis, which boiled down to, unless you're a shooter, heroin, or something else, you're as likely to have this problem as to have a safe fall on your head. That is to have a fall on your head and not have any problems. You're as likely as that. I mean, look at it logically. If you understand numbers at all, just by geometrical progression, if it were all true, everybody's dead by now. Now, the nervous reporter says, he continues like this, leaving me frantically to parse his words. Why do you have to parse his words? He's saying that...
Well, why are you frantic?
Yeah, what's true about it? So you have to just ask the question, what does AIDS have to do with sex? And you have to go and look it up, and you find out there's almost no connection at all. And when you read studies about transmission of what they call HIV, which is just giving two different people two different tests that don't measure anything, but measure just about every bacterial or fungal or whatever infection, You come up with things like the Padian study from 1997, a six-year study. We followed 175 HIV discordant couples, one's positive, one's negative, over time for a total of 282 couple years of follow-up. No transmission of HIV occurred among the 25% of couples who did not use their condoms consistently, nor among the 47 couples who intermittently practiced unsafe sex during the entire duration of follow-up. We observed no seroconversions after entry into the study. Nobody became HIV positive. 175 couples, split them down the middle, positive, negative. They have sex, every kind of sex. If you read the study, they have every kind of sex, including anal sex, with and without condoms. This evidence argues for low infectivity in the absence of either needle sharing and or other cofactors. So what's so crazy about what Jack Nicholson said? That's the crazy scientific analysis.
But the question is that did that conversation make it into the article in Rolling Stones?
It did. It made it into the print article, but they wouldn't let it online, which I thought was interesting. I read it in print, and then I went to read the article online, and these three or four paragraphs weren't there. So I bought the magazine and I typed it up, and you can find it, it's there. You have to ask the question. I guess they didn't want that controversy hitting the web. Well, here it is. You can find it on my site.
LiamSheff.com. And when you see these types of stories, Liam, and you read these types of things, one would expect that there would be more of a discussion on this than what there is, but there's not.
There's no discussion. This is the religion of the day. I don't know any other way to put it but that. This has taken over people's hearts and minds as the thing to be afraid of. We don't have any catechisms anymore. We don't have any signs of the cross. There's nothing for people to hold on to give them a grip on all of their sort of unfiltered neuroses. This is perfect. It serves every purpose. Look, the tests don't work. Malaria causes AIDS, except that the thing that we're using isn't even a good predictor of T-cell depletion, and we shouldn't use it anymore. That story will go. It'll just go away. I mean, it will be taken out, because the important thing to remember is, as you know, HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. They say it like a mantra. It's bunk. AIDS is a brand name for anything that happens, but we associate it with sex. We live in a culture without any we don't have a particular church we go to anymore to vent our spleens, to hide our sort of undiagnosed neuroses about sex. And we all have undiagnosed neuroses about sex. Sex is a complex thing, and it takes everybody time to figure out, you know, who they are and how they are and all the rest of it. It's difficult stuff to do, and we've traditionally turned to the church to tell us, if we didn't feel brave enough to sort of explore it, what was okay and what wasn't. We dismantled the church in this country, for good and for bad, I don't know. We dismantled the church in Europe. There were all of the reformations and enlightenments and all the rest of it. There's just no particular place that people turn anymore to vent their psychological spleens, as it were. This is absolutely perfect. It is impossible to shake. It works economically. I swear, you can get into any country you want. You can. The United States can do business in China at a level that they could just never do. We can actually monitor the population in China, and the Chinese government will sort of...
We can create a Chinese database.
Yes, and they'll let us do that. Because,
if we're talking about AIDS.
Because you wrap a red ribbon around it.
Mm.
It's just the most amazing... It's really the greatest show on earth. I just don't know what to say about it, except that it's like a juggernaut. It's unstoppable. The funny thing is that the populations that you think should be concerned about this, because they're being victimized, the gay population, you know, the population of women in countries who are sex workers, this is actually a way out for them. If you look at China, you're gay and you're a gay dissident, you're as good as dead. But if you wrap that red ribbon around yourself, and you stand there on the international stage with Bill Clinton and Bill Gates and all the rest of them, you are protected. But it's a quid pro quo. You have to take your medicine.
Mm.
You know, you can't just be out. If you're a sex worker in India, you're as good as dead. You know, you can be killed. You can be burnt to death. You can be stoned. It depends on where you are and under what circumstances. And I'm not talking about all of India. I'm just talking about some of the places in the rural areas where it's still very some of the tribal rules hold over any of the other kind of rules, it's very problematic. You wrap that red ribbon around yourself, and women can empower. We're empowered now. We control the sex. We won't be raped. We won't be subjugated. You know, but you have to take your medicine. You have to assume somehow that sex for you is a potentially fatal act. And in the ways that I just described it, it is a potentially fatal act.
I mean, doesn't anybody raise... this gets to the point that you're making about the understanding and the attitude towards people from Africans. Wouldn't you raise the question of, Jesus Christ, how on earth could it be imploding like this but for the racist assessment? Well, you know how they are about sex, and that's how it's imploding in Africa.
Right. How is it that all Africans, it's easy, of course, you know, they're all blah, 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 blah. I don't even know exactly how people quantify it, except to say, well, here it is. I mean, for a long time they didn't know how to quantify it. Now they've gotten to it. We have to cut the... I just made myself laugh. We have to cut the end off black men's penis.
There you go. How much money is made by those in the AIDS industry?
I can't give you a figure. We all know the $15 billion that was flown around a couple of years ago, you know, as a sort of a gift to make sure that the drugs were flowing. I only know anecdotally. I've looked at GlaxoSmithKline. They're a company that makes money. You know, they make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions, close to billions of dollars on these drugs. This is a big business. This is like Hollywood-type business. It's big. It's booming. The drug business is the business in America besides, you know, weapons and, I think, useless plastic is the other thing we make. I know that the AIDS industry itself, for example, in San Francisco, the gay community is, in essence, sort of has to wear all of these AIDS banners and AIDS flags, or I don't think they would be protected in the way that they are from the sort of hatred that flowed onto them in the 70s. From outside of the gay community. And I know that the people who man these AIDS organizations, you know, Stop AIDS, Stop HIV, you know, like there's some sexual marauder running through your neighborhood and you can just stop everybody from having sex. I always see this and I think, are you joking? I mean, you're actually asking people not to have sex as you tell them to have, you know, sex. I've never been able to figure out what it's supposed to be, but I know the people who run these things make large, half-million-dollar, et cetera, salaries, and they've been criticized in the press for doing so. But as soon as you criticize them for doing so, you're criticizing, essentially, you're called a homophobe.
So it is protection, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a blanket of protection for people in the world who would otherwise not be protected, which is, you know, again, the most amazing thing about it, from my perspective.
Liam, where can people find out more information?
LiamSchef.com, LiamSchef.com, and
SchefF.com.
Yep.
Very good. Liam Schef, thank you so much, and happy holidays to
you. Happy holidays, Liz. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown. Oh, we've come to the end of another day. This is the last Mondays at 9. This is the last Monday in 2006. That's something for the show. I will be back next Monday. Listen, folks, I will see you all tomorrow. And again, thank you all so much for helping with the third annual Wake Up Call Blanket Drive. Until tomorrow, thanks for listening and stay strong.
Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.